wingers who are branded a danger to children and because of their right-wing views are not allowed to act as a football coach. You did hear that correctly. Back to the government, Work and Pension Secretary Pat McFadden talking about the drive to get more apprenticeships. He told LBC...
This NEETS issue has been rising for 4 years. It's also international. And I think this should become a Labour cause.
The big Netflix deal. We'll give you the latest from the other side of the Atlantic. The three-year-old who's among 21 hurt in a Heathrow pepper spray and core Lando.
Lando Norris crosses the line and for the first time in his racing career, he is Formula One champion of the world.
Proving that nice guys can come first. All that after the 7 o'clock news on LBC.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 7 o'clock, Keir Starmer is to host a mini-summit to discuss how to respond to American proposals for ending the war in Ukraine. He will hold talks with Volodymyr Zelensky and the leaders of France and Germany at Downing Street later. The White House is continuing to press Kyiv to accept a deal with Moscow. Foreign policy expert Jeffrey Price says Ukraine has become the front line of defence for Europe.
However this winds up, in Ukraine, and I think it's unlikely to be a very satisfying settlement, if there is any kind of a settlement. Any peace is going to be an uneasy one, not just for Ukraine, but for Europe.
The Defense Secretary, John Healey, has revealed plans to protect critical undersea cables and pipelines. Warships and aircraft will be bolstered by autonomous vehicles and AI to help counter the Russian threat in the Atlantic. Mr. Healey says the UK must be able to match Moscow's capabilities.
We know the sort of threat that Russia poses. We know the big investment they're making in to try and develop it further. And we're determined not just to match that, but to make sure that Britain, working with allies like Norway, can remain ahead of that threat.
More than £700 million is to be spent on creating apprenticeships in sectors including AI, hospitality and engineering. Ministers are trying to reverse a sharp decline in the number of young people taking up the training roles. Reform UK has strongly denied breaking the law on election spending in Nigel Farage's constituency in Essex. An activist who worked on Mr Farage's campaign in Clacton has reportedly submitted files to the Metropolitan Police. He's claimed Mr Farage failed to register all of his expenses. Lando Norris has thanked his McLaren teammates for making his childhood dream come true. The British driver finished third in yesterday's Abu Dhabi Grand Prix to win his first Formula One world title. Norris says it belongs to his parents too.
This is one I get to say thank you, Mum, and thank you, Dad. They're the ones who sacrificed so much to let me be the lucky boy that I am today, to live my dream, to do what I have loved doing since I was a kid.
In the city, the FTSE 100 will reopen this morning at 96.67 after closing down 43 on Friday. The pound buys $1.33 and €1.14. LBC weather, dry with bright spells for many, but quite cloudy across the south. Showers continuing in Northern Ireland and Scotland. A high of 14 Celsius. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watt.
At Vodafone, you can save up to £1,032 with the Samsung Galaxy S25 FE when you trade in an eligible phone. And keep you and your family connected this Christmas. Hurry! Offer ends the 17th of December. So, go online or in-store today. Vodafone.
Save £576 on 5GB airtime over 36 months. £144 on phone and £312 with trade-in. Phone cost is £534. Credit and trade-in checks and terms apply. Financed by Vodafone.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Good morning, 3 minutes after seven on December the 8th, and coming up in this hour, the criminals who, and I quote, have been involved in terrorism or extremism-related activities that cannot be deported. We'll give you a full report and, of course, get your reaction. In other news...
A three-year-old is among 21 people hurt in a pepper spray attack at Heathrow after a woman was targeted in a suitcase robbery. I'm LBC's Helen Hoddenott with the details.
Picking up on that story you heard on the LBC News report there, the drive to create some 50,000 apprenticeships. But this is as, under this government, we are losing 1,000 jobs a day, particularly among young people, particularly in the hospitality sector. In the world of business... Yes, boom, boom, it's on. Netflix will buy Warner Brothers. We're giving you full details later in this hour. Plus, to restaurants and the idea that there should be a different size of portions according to whether you're a man or a woman. Women should get smaller portions, by the way. Professor Naveed Sattar, chairman of the government's Obesity Healthcare Goals Programme, defending the report.
The article in no way denigrated women in any respect whatsoever. It was just the fact that what we need is more choices in portion sizes to help many people who do not need to eat 1,000 calories at a sitting.
And the extraordinary story of the man who's got fairly right-wing views and as a result of those isn't allowed to coach his daughter's football team. A crackdown on right-wing views even when it comes to soccer coaching? It's later in the show.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
Question, what would you do with 170 terrorists or 170 criminals who, quotes, have been involved in terrorism or extremism-related activities? What would you seek to do with them? Would you try and boot them out of the country? Or would you, as this government does, allow them to wander the streets? Admittedly, they're being monitored, but at considerable expense. Well, you know which it is, and there's 170 of them on the streets. It's an exclusive by yesterday's Sunday Express government documents revealing that dozens of dangerous foreign nationals, their words not mine, are allowed to remain in the UK. The Home Office cannot deport them due to human rights laws and our old friend the ECHR. There's 170 of them. Pose a threat for public safety. No disputing that. Being housed under restrictions, some 24-hour surveillance and wearing tags. Well, when you consider that, it takes somewhere, it is reported, between 6 and 8 monitors, people, men and women, to actually follow. In some instances, you need 8 of them. And we're doing for this 24 hours a day. Can you think of the expense? Now, this is Home Secretary Shabana Mahmood. Last month, promising an overhaul of human rights laws and tighter controls.
Our asylum system is broken. The breaking of that asylum system is causing huge division across our whole country. It is a moral mission for me to resolve that division across our country. I know that the reforms I will be setting out later on today can fix this system, and in doing so, can unite what is today a divided country.
Well, those 170, I remind you, 170 are among other criminals, foreign criminals and asylum seekers avoiding being deported back to their home countries after claiming a right to family life, set out under Article 8 of the ECHR, of which the UK remains a member. The latest revelations have provoked fresh calls from opposition parties to withdraw from the convention, but responding to her Conservative opposite number, Chris Philp, from whom you'll hear in just a moment, the Home Secretary in the Commons last month refused to come out of the convention.
This government will not come out of the European Convention on Human Rights. What we are going to do is reform the way that Article 8 in particular is applied to immigration rules within our country. That is because this government rolls up its sleeves and does the actual hard work of government governing, unlike his party, which just gave up altogether.
Well, let's turn to Chris Philp, who has served as a policing minister and is now Shadow Home Secretary and joins me now. As policing minister, Mr. Philp, can you get any sense of how much this might be costing the taxpayer? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Look, I've only got 4 or 5 minutes, so I'll come straight to the point. It's going to cost a huge amount of money to monitor 170 terror suspects. Some of them will require round-the-clock monitoring. And that is why we Conservatives have reached the conclusion we have to come out of the ECHR. It is totally unacceptable that dangerous terrorists and criminals are allowed to stay in the UK because of their human rights. They're criminals. They should get kicked out and returned to their country of origin. And by the way, it's a lot more than 170. There are now something like 20,000 foreign nationals, people who are citizens of another country, who have served at least or sentenced to at least a year in prison and are still in this country. They should all be deported. And in many cases, it's the ECHR that lets them stay here. And that is why we've got to scrap it and come out of it.
I can hear my listeners saying, and I could see you being challenged in the House, congratulations, you've taken us to the same level as Russia or Belarusia. How would you respond, Shadow Home Secretary?
Well, that is obviously nonsense. There are many respectable countries not in the ECHR, Australia, Canada, New Zealand, and so on and so forth. And the idea that the only thing that protects human rights in the UK is the ECHR is obviously nonsense. We've had free speech and habeas corpus and all those sort of rights going back centuries and centuries and centuries. And of course, our own parliament here can legislate to protect rights where needed. But the truth is, Nick, as you know and as your listeners know, the ECHR is being exploited by foreign criminals to stay in this country when they should get deported.
This question is for them, Mr. Phil, but why is there a reluctance from the government to engage in this thought process, do you imagine?
Well, because they're run by a human rights lawyer. Keir Starmer's a human rights lawyer, and he cares more about the human rights of foreign criminals than he does about protecting the British public.
Last question, I know you have to go. What should happen as of today, as of now? Because it's going to be a lengthy process. Even you would accept we can't leave it by tomorrow afternoon. So what should happen as regards these 170 terrorists?
Well, look, I mean, you can give 6 months' notice to leave, and that is what the government should do. In the meantime, the government should be using every means at its disposal to kick out these 170 people straight away, appealing all the way to the Supreme Court if needed. But the solution ultimately is to come out of the ECHR, and the only serious political party with a credible plan to do that is the Conservative Party.
Shadow Home Secretary Chris Philp, thanks for joining us here on LBC 10 minutes after 7. Let's bring to the conversation Lucy Morton, who's professional officer at the ISU, the Union for Borders, Immigration and Customs, and a former chief immigration officer at the UK Border Force. OK, yours is a bit more of a dispassionate and independent view. I wonder if I could ask you, what do you think the ramifications would be of the United Kingdom seeking to leave the ECHR? Morning to you.
Good morning. That's very much a political question that's difficult to answer. A lot of
as
our
regards your colleagues, though, would their life become easier, harder? What would it mean as regards the enforcement of immigration laws?
Certainly the use of Article 8 to frustrate removal, not just for individuals where there are security concerns, but across the board, is a particular problem. Because it takes so long to get asylum, you've got a lot of time, or actually to get refused asylum, you've got a lot of time to meet someone, marry someone, produce a child, and then say, well, I'm sorry, I've got a family life here now, I can't go anywhere. And there's a whole criminal underworld that specialises in what is effectively a reverse mail order bribe, mail order groom system to get you here, get you married, and get you able to make claims under Article 8. And certainly it would make things a lot clearer. But it is a political point as to the extent to which these rights should be protected.
This, in a sense, of course, is a terrible example of this, but what are the procedures that you have to go through to get some people returned to countries that prove more difficult? What are the areas there that cause the hurdles?
So there are countries who will not accept the return of their nationals unless they have their own nationality passport. And if the individual will not cooperate with getting that, they will not go to their High Commission or to their embassy and make that application, then we can't remove them. There are countries that we just do not remove to because they are recognised to be in a state of war, for example, Somalia. So you do have individuals who might, in fact, not be Somali citizens, but might be Ethiopian or Eritrean or Kenyan, who say that they're Somali because they know that we won't remove them there. So that, you know, the Article 8 issue is not the only barrier to removal.
It's always in the headlines, whether it's cases such as these or the small boat crossings. What's the morale like among your staff, the men and women who have to actually man our borders, or staff our borders, I should say, my apologies?
Thank you. It is extremely difficult. The role for a border officer has been made more complicated by successive governments. A lot of the autonomy and control that they had in previous years to make sensible intelligence and experience-led decisions has been removed. We've got issues with the quality of visas, particularly visas not issued by UK staff. Morale is difficult, and we're under, you know, you'd expect this for a trade union, we're understaffed and underpaid.
Grateful for your time, Lucy. Thank you, Lucy Morton, your professional officer at the ISU, the Union for Borders, Immigration and Customs, and former chief immigration officer at the UK Border Force. Well, you've heard what the Conservatives would like to do. Here's what the Home Secretary is talking about. Human rights laws will be overhauled to limit how failed asylum seekers, foreign criminals, and, of course, people that engaged in terrorist acts, can claim a right to family life to dodge deportation. A family will be defined as parents and their children under new Home Office plans. Give me a break. Do you think that will make the slightest bit of difference? Meanwhile, judges will be ordered to prioritise public safety and immigration controls over Article 8 of the European Convention on Human Rights. Just get out of the ECHR. It is so straightforward. And those of you who would say, I can't believe he'll do that, will be like Russia. Well, the last time I looked, Australia, New Zealand, I won't go all around the world, but you know the point I'm making, Canada, every other country, they don't need to be in the ECHR. You don't need to be in this convention, which, excuse me, in part was drawn up, no, it hasn't gone, has it? In part was drawn up after the Second World War. Labour's also insisted that the United Kingdom will try to renegotiate Article 3, the right to freedom from persecution and torture. Well, all your luck with that. You know it is not going to happen. Can any of you give me a cogent argument as to why we should not, as the Shadow Home Secretary just said, serve notice this afternoon, we will be leaving the ECHR in the middle of next year, and good riddance. Unless, of course, you think it's the wrong way. We'll take your views on that. Plus, later in this hour, you'll hear from the government on a drive to get in more apprenticeships, as you heard on the LBC News Bulletin. Barry Fletcher is CEO of Youth Futures Foundation, a charity aiming to reduce youth unemployment. It supports the government's plans to get young people into the workplace.
We think it is a positive plan. We think it addresses some of the key challenges that young people are facing. We know that more will need to be done. The scale of the challenge is significant, but we think this is a really good first step.
That's later in this hour. 7:15 now, LBC News headlines then, read by Thomas Watts.
The Prime Minister is to host Ukraine's leader in London in a show of European support for Volodymyr Zelensky. The Defence Secretary's revealed plans to protect undersea cables from the Russian threat, and ministers are to set out a major investment in apprenticeships. LBC weather, dry with bright spells for many, cloudy in the south, and rain in Scotland and Northern Ireland. A high of 14 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Severe delays on the western stretch of the M25. Clockwise, there are lengthy queues up to junction 16 at the M40. It's because of an accident. Anti-clockwise is open, but it's slow from junction 17 at Maple Cross because of onlookers. In Addlesden, there's been an accident on the A318, the North Hall Road. So as a result, the road is partially blocked and there are lengthy queues both ways. On the train, Southeastern are running southbound between Tunbridge and Hastings, and that's because a train has broken down. Also on the underground, there are severe delays on the Piccadilly line between Acton Town and Uxbridge, and there are minor delays on the Victoria line, but the delays on the Bakerloo have cleared.
This is LBC.
That's my orchestra of rubber ducks playing for me whilst I soak in a bubble bath. Yes, I have rubber ducks playing for me. I wish I could tell you that checking your tax and making any claims on the HMRC app felt like this. But I wouldn't go that far. Although, it is easier, and it will make you feel that little bit more on it.
For your money and tax, download the HMRC app and be on it today. You're on it.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973. This is LBC.
There's an old Thai saying that roughly translates as: the family who takes the internet on holiday can locate a less crowded beach. Particularly handy, my friend, if it's peak mating season for nippy little crabs. Pack the internet with an eSIM from Airalo. That's A-I-R-A-L-O.
At ulizprosperity.com, you buy the car and we pay you up to £600 per month in rental income. For conditions, visit ulizprosperity.com.
Waitrose presents...
Ooh, yum.
The story of one woman sacrificing everything.
Oh, is that for me?
Yeah, of course.
Well, the last piece of the number one 30-hour oak and hickory smoked Scottish salmon.
Oh, thanks, love.
For her girlfriend... Because she knows it's her favourite.
That's so smoky.
Waitrose, the home of food lovers. Selected stores subject to availability.
The Big Tasty is back at McDonald's, but now it's a double. It's the beefiest Big Tasty of all time ever. Oh, got a bit intense there. The new double Big Tasty, now at McDonald's. Available until the 4th of Jan 2026 from 11 a.m. Price and participation may vary, subject to availability.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
18 minutes after 7, come to your reaction on the idea to leave the ECHR. As I say, for those of you who think we suddenly descend into some third world state, there are plenty of developed nations who somehow seem to manage to muddle along without it. Quick look at the front pages, and I've told you many, many times, in the world of newspapers, the old expression Sunday for Monday, they're always difficult to fill sometimes on a Monday because there's not that many around, and it really is. There's no two front pages the same, so I won't give them all to you, as I'll be here all morning. But the Daily... Well, they all have the same... Most of them have the same picture. Actually, I think they... Probably apart from the FT. Which is a great news. An emotional Lando Norris securing his first Formula One World Championship. Such a picture of unbridled joy and elation. And we're talking to someone who was one of his teachers later in this hour to get a little bit of background on the young man. So he's on the front page of the Telegraph. They have that story about how right-wingers have branded a danger to children, or danger to children. And one particular man isn't even allowed to coach his daughter's football team, which would seem a little bit dramatic. The Daily Mail, public no longer have trust in the NHS over dementia care. As I say, there are so many that just keep coming. The Sun newspaper is telling us that the Home Office are going to review security awarded to Prince Harry. Remember, he hasn't seen, the King hasn't seen his grandchildren since 2022, with Prince Harry saying it's not safe for them to return to the United Kingdom. It is reported the Home Office will now review that. The Times has an intriguing story. The state will encourage all staff to join a union. It could fall on employers to put up notices and to provide details of how their staff could join a trade union. And lastly, the Metro pepper spray attack chaos at Heathrow. And my LBC colleague Helen Hodden will be telling you more about that in just a moment. To the LBC app, and they, as indeed are our news bulletins, getting you ready for this summit now. Zelensky to join Starmer at Downing Street for high-level Ukraine peace talks. We will, of course, keep you up to date with how they progress through the course of the day on our news bulletins. And the Sky News has the story, the allegation that Nigel Farage, in the run-up to when he was successful out at the Clacton constituency in Essex, allegedly broke electoral law by spending more than was allowed. I need to tell you, Reform UK says this is just some moaning and complaining from someone who is a disaffected councillor, and the councillor saying that it needs to be investigated. Now, I mentioned that front page of the Metro. Let's get to that first. Thousands of travellers faced a day of chaos at Heathrow Airport after a pepper spray attack in a multi-storey car park. Among those injured was a three-year-old girl. LBC's reporter Helen Hodnott in the studio now. Helen, good morning.
Morning, Nick. Yes, eyewitnesses have described a scene of chaos and confusion as this unfolded yesterday morning. Armed police were called to the multi-storey car park at Heathrow Terminal 3 shortly after 8 a.m. and found a large group of people suffering the effects of what the Met said was believed to be a type of pepper spray. They said the substance appears to have been used after a group of four men stole a woman's suitcase in the lift in the car park. They believe it was an isolated incident with those directly involved known to each other, and said it wasn't treated as terrorism. Tom Bate had just landed back in the UK from Texas. He says he was waiting for the lift with about 40 to 50 others, including children and elderly people, when he saw young men dressed in black with their faces covered. He said they were looking around a lot and laughing, looked like they were having fun, but he says as soon as they left, people started coughing.
One at a time at first, and then suddenly I sort of looked around and everyone in the room was coughing, including me. There was a burning in my throat, and it was one of the weirdest things I've ever experienced.
He says he then saw between 15 and 20 heavily armed police officers arriving, which he described as a slightly eerie moment, like in disaster movies when you realise no one is actually in control. The Met says a 31-year-old man was arrested on suspicion of assault within 9 minutes of that report coming in. A three-year-old girl, as you say, was among 21 people treated for injuries, including five who were taken to hospital for conditions not thought to be life-changing or life-threatening. But policing and crime commentator Danny Shaw told LBC about the severity of the use of pepper spray.
These are weapons, essentially, banned under the Firearms Act 1968. If anyone's found to have used it, you know, some serious consequences will follow.
So, as I say, one man has been arrested. He remains in custody, with police now urgently searching for further suspects who fled the scene.
LBC's Helen Hodden not reporting, 7:23. Let's come to your reaction if you're just joining the show. 170, it was revealed yesterday on the front page of one of your Sunday newspapers, the Sunday Express. There are 170 foreign nationals who have been engaged in terrorism or terrorism-related offences and are deemed by the Home Office to be dangerous, all of whom are currently walking the streets, in part because of this government's reluctance to leave the ECHR. Instead, they talk about reforms and reviews, which have got absolutely nowhere for 18 months, and nothing is going to change. And this is people's safety that is at stake. These people, I remind you, these aren't just, which again, I don't carry any brief for these people, but these aren't low-level crimes such as theft or whatever it might be, or even drug dealing. This is terror or terrorism-related. I wonder if, as part, we're paying the price for having a human rights law at the very top. This is what you're saying on social media and your texts. This comes in from Mark. The Conservatives need to be asked how many of the 170 foreign criminals arrived under the Conservative government and why didn't they remove them at the time. But you don't like to ask the Conservatives that because you want to try and protect them. Meanwhile, different view here from Albert in Croydon. Any government's first priority should be the security and safety of its citizens. Yet this government seems to choose to ignore that fact. Sadly, it did. This is William. With terrorists, isn't it better that we can keep an eye on them here than send them back to wherever they might be to start plotting again? Sending them home won't stop them coming back and doing something here, which we're less likely to know about. I see your argument, William, but I think that's nonsensical because it's impossible to work out, well, I suppose it is possible, 170 of them needing full-time monitoring and wearing tags 24 hours a day. The cost is enormous. I would rather send them back to wherever it might be, Afghanistan, Pakistan, India, I don't know, just send them back. Ben in Stockwell, human rights for all of us, not just for foreign criminals. Well, again, Ben, I would point you to a country such as the United States or Canada or Australia or New Zealand or many, many others, and many others in the world where people are not routinely tied up with barbed wire and thrown in cells with a flickering light bulb for their entire lives. You do not need to be part of a European convention to guarantee human rights in this country. Same subject. This comes in from Steve-O. It's very easy as a majority government. They could get anything they want done to smear the previous lot that were blocked at every turn with an attempt to change things. Labour seem to be totally dishonest and accusing others for the lack of action. The actions they have blocked and stopped when the Conservatives were in power. Barry's in Hailsham. Barry, how popular or otherwise do you think it would be if the government said, yes, we are looking to leave the ECHR? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Yeah, I think it's a pretty mainstream view now to leave the ECHR. It wasn't 3 or 4 years ago. It is now. Some main parties are speaking up on doing that. I think the problem that the Labour Party have got, Nick, is they're ideologically attached still to rejoining the European Union. I even think Keir Starmer said something about that yesterday insofar as rejoining in his life. So, correct me if I'm wrong, Rob, but to rejoin or to be a member of the European Union, you need to be a subscriber to the ECHR. So remaining in the ECHR gives us a foothold to being in the European Union in the future. And they can't bring themselves to ditch it. So inevitably, I think we will.
Can I ask you, Barry, have you always been against the ECHR? You said now it's becoming more mainstream. What was it that made you change your mind, or have you always had issues with it from the word go?
Well, I'm not too different about what you said at the top about Magna Carta and habeas corpus and things like that. Nick, I travel a lot around the country, okay? Mm. Like the south, South Wales, Colchester and all over the south coast. I speak to lots of different people. It really is a mainstream view among the working class at least now, you know? So inevitably, I do think it will happen over the next few years, but we just got to get rid of this government first.
And lastly, the idea, and you will hear this from opponents, that we will go back to being a country like Russia, that we will do away with our human rights, that it protects people like you as you're driving around. Well, I exactly agree, but I mean, I just think it's nonsense, but I need to put it to you lastly, Barry, and then I'll let you get on with your day.
Yeah, no, it is. That pretty much. I mean, it was designed with good intentions in Winston Churchill's time, shortly after the war. It served its purpose. It's so out of date now. We need to leave, don't we, I think? Thank you.
And safe driving, thank you. I think, as you rightly say, it is becoming more of a widely held view. Barry, safe driving. You're obviously in a vehicle. Harry's in Waltham Forest. Do you agree that we do need to get out? Good morning.
Morning, Nick.
Hello, sir.
We need to get out, but Labour will never leave.
The reason
they will never leave is because you have to be a member to rejoin the union.
So exactly what Barry just said, the idea is that they want us to go back into the European Union, and so they know they can't leave the ECHR.
Yes.
Although, and I'll ask you to comment on this, Keir Starmer said that is never, ever going to happen. You simply don't believe him.
Never a month of Sundays.
how have you always, lastly, same question I put to Barry, have you always been against the Convention of Human Rights, or is it recently that you've changed your mind? What's the story?
Well, for years we were promised time and time again we'd have our own British Bill of Rights, and it's never materialised.
It has not. You're absolutely right. Thanks very much indeed, Harry. Have yourself a safe day. We will continue this conversation then, coming up after the news. Corlando!
Lando Norris crosses the line, and for the first time in his racing career, he is Formula One champion of the world!
And I don't know about you, but that's the first time I have watched every second and every lap of a Formula One race in years. But I think I heard from commentary there from Sky Sports that Max Verstappen has been world champion for something like 1,400 days or 1,500. Can that possibly be true? Did I hear that correctly? Has it been 4 years? Because it just became procession, didn't it? I'll make sure that I'm right on that. But what we do know is that a Brit is now crowned world champion. It's such good news. We're going to be speaking with his former school tutor, because it does appear that he has proved that nice guys can come first, and we'll check if he was a nice lad at school. Plus, in the world of business, they don't get much bigger than this. Now, if you don't know what that means, I think you're probably in a minority now, but Netflix to buy Warner Brothers. We'll have details after this. 7.30, breakfast with me, Nick Ferrara, here on LBC. News time, Thomas Watts.
Sir Keir Starmer will host Volodymyr Zelensky at Downing Street later to discuss plans for peace in Ukraine. European powers are rallying behind Kiev as it faces growing pressure from the US to agree a deal with Russia. The Defence Secretary, John Healey, has revealed plans to protect Britain's critical undersea cables and pipelines. The hybrid naval force is in intended to counter the growing Russian threat to the essential infrastructure. It's hoped 50,000 young people will benefit from new apprenticeships in AI, hospitality and engineering. Ministers want to reverse a 40% decline in the take-up of the training roles over the last decade. LBC weather, dry with bright spells for many, quite cloudy in the south and showers continuing in Scotland and Northern Ireland. A high of 14 degrees.
Tom Swarbrick on LBC.
Nigel Farage has said, well, the BBC are hypocrites because at the time that I was not racially abusing people in a direct way at school, they were showing Bernard Manning and his name half Hopmer. And in that press conference, I think you got an example, it's one example, of I'm not sure whether Nigel Farage is yet ready to become the Prime Minister he thinks he can be. That was not good. He lost it, didn't he? Just answer the question. You've got to find a better answer than that, because that was embarrassing.
Tom Swarbrick, Monday to Friday from 4 p.m. Listen on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app.
At Morrison's this Christmas, pick up the best signature collection Scottish smoked salmon with New York deli style seasoning, gently smoked over oak and cask chippings in our Grimsby kilns for 16 hours. See why it's good housekeeping approved. Morrison's, making more of Christmas. Majority of stores and online, offers and prices may vary online and in Morrison's daily.
Train to Cambridge and then all aboard the paddleboards. A little bit different, should be fun. All wobbly, all wet.
The wetsuit's a good look on you, Steve.
Oh, actually, this is very relaxed.
George is up the river cam without a paddle.
Train home, that was such a laugh. I think I might even have a new hobby. Download the Thames Link Railway app to book tickets and save a third off group travel on off-peak journeys. Thames Link Railway, where every stop is a story.
Buying a home on a holiday park was the retreat you always wanted. But then came unexpected site fee increases. And that was before the dramatic loss in value. If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, you may have been missold. Holidayparkadvicecentre.co.uk could help you receive thousands in compensation. Text ASSIST to 78900. That's ASSIST to 78900.
When you're smiling.
Banning Dental Group Clinics. With over 5,000 top-rated Google reviews. Keep on smiling.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
Come back to your calls on the conversation about the ECHR. Ned, you will be the next caller. 7.33 into the world of business. And do you want to try and put a price on a franchise that includes Harry Potter, Game of Thrones and the streaming service HBO Max? Well, one company has. Details now, Christian May, Editor-in-Chief at City AM. What's that worth this morning, then? Morning, Christian.
Well, good morning, Nick. We are looking at one streaming service to rule them all if this deal goes through. Netflix have planned to stump up £54 billion, just over $70 billion, to bring Warner Brothers Discovery's movie studio and the HBO streaming network onto the Netflix platform. It would be the biggest media deal in history. There were other bidders for Warner Brothers, but Netflix has appeared to come out on top. Matter of fact, all Netflix customers would have received an email late, I think, on Friday evening saying, you'll have seen reports of this, rest assured nothing's going to change immediately. But a lot of things will change down the line if this deal goes through. I say if, because it would, of course, have to clear competition hurdles. This would be an enormous consolidation in the marketplace. And there's a lot of opposition to it from writers' unions and the such in Hollywood, and indeed plenty of political opposition from Republican and Democrat lawmakers in the US. And Donald Trump himself, who was speaking at an event in Washington, D.C. last night, said that he will get personally involved in this deal. He says there's no doubt that Netflix already has a very big market share, the biggest of all the streaming services, which would go up by a lot if this deal goes ahead. He says it's for economists to consider what the implications of that could be, but he said that he will take a personal look in getting this deal over the line or not. He didn't express a view on it. He is quite close to some of the other people who were bidding. So this is now a big enough deal in its own right. It's now going to go into the Oval Office, making it even bigger.
Trump likes a winner, though. I sense possibly he'll give it a presidential thumbs up. We'll have to wait and see. Back here in the UK, you'll know better than I. Scratchy day to do as editors, as Sunday for Monday. The front page of The Times, the state to encourage all staff to join a union. Not sure if it's a splash, but what lies behind it, Christian?
Well, it's just more information coming out as the Employment Rights Bill takes shape. Ministers are desperate to get it over the line. It returns to the House of Commons today. And as such, we're hearing a little bit more about some of the details that are going to be included in it. We spoke last week, didn't we, about the changes to the amount that you could claim in compensation for unfair dismissal. That's alarmed some employers and employment lawyers. We now know, a little bit down the batting order, another little piece of information coming out, that part of this bill is going to require every private sector employer in Britain, or in fact every employer in Britain, to promote trade union membership to their employees. Now, some people say this is perfectly reasonable, and once you're taken on and you're given all your inductions and briefings and contracts, you should also have a piece of paper that says these are your rights, this is the trade union that looks after this sector, you can join it. Most of the business groups have said that would be okay, not unreasonable, but they're worried that the law might go a bit too far and require government-written information with a very pro-union spin, as some business groups have cautioned this morning, repeatedly pushed out to employees, something akin to a union recruitment drive, rather than simply informing employees of their rights. The Tories think it's ridiculous, the trade unions think it's perfectly sensible. And now the battle lines have been drawn on that. And we'll see, as it returns to the House of Commons today, any other surprises as ministers, as I say, desperate to get this bill over the line.
Space might have been the final frontier for Captain Kirk and Star Trek, but why is a bit of a headache in London?
Well, despite the fact that, you know, you can walk around particularly parts of the city in the Square Mile and indeed Canary Wharf and see an awful lot of building activity, the fact of the matter is it doesn't really scratch the surface of office demand. In fact, London is said to now be running out of usable office space. And in recent years, it has in fact lost 28 gherkins worth, which is a new measure.
Just explain for people outside of London, what is the gherkin?
Yeah, well, if you don't know your gherkin from your scalpel, from your cheese grater, these are the nicknames given to a variety of iconic buildings in London. The problem that most people have now is that although there's an awful lot of legacy building space, two things have happened. First, after the pandemic, when everyone got very excited at the idea that no one's going to work in offices anymore, the law was changed to make it easier to turn these buildings into student accommodation and retail outlets and accommodation of other sorts. So some of that went underway. What's also happened is that businesses now have to account for their sustainability metrics and their carbon footprint, and even in the very building that they rent takes that into account. So therefore people say, well, we must move into a building of a certain grade and quality on the sort of sustainability and environmental score. And that rules out most buildings built, you know, more than 10 years ago or thereabouts. So there's huge demand for the premium office space, which will allow businesses to say, and look, we've moved into a terribly eco-friendly office. So there's a real pinch point. Canary Wharf has still, you know, got a big, big spring in its step. We know big banks, JP Morgan and others, building new towers down there. But on the whole, there is a bit of a crunch coming.
Christian, thank you. I'll let you get on with your day. Christian Mayer's editor-in-chief at City AM, taking us to 7:39. We've talked a lot of numbers. Here's one more for you. 170. That would be the number of foreign nationals who have been involved in terrorism or terrorism-related activities who are pose a, quote, dangerous threat, close quotes, as the Home Office sees it, and who we cannot deport. Instead, they are effectively roaming free. Admittedly, some are tagged, some are 24-hour monitoring. That means, I would imagine, in some instances, being trailed all the time. I'm suggesting that the Conservatives might actually have got something right. Time to get out of the ECHR and boot these people back to where they belong. Ned's in Bradfield. Ned, your reaction. Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. How are you tonight?
All right, thank you. Yes, good. I'm happy because Norris won. I'm really pleased about it. I don't know why I'm so pleased about it. I am.
One free thing there. Good stuff. You know, bless you. So, I just listened to the conversation. I've only just tuned in, so just sort of just picking up sticks. But I think before we decide to jump off the cliff again, I think it might be nice if we actually looked into what we're leading and maybe did a bit more of education. I mean, I live in an area which voted Tory even in the last general election. Everyone here.
My goodness me.
Yes. I mean, Nigel is 10 minutes up the road from me, so I'm sort of right in the thick of the,
Reform land, yeah.
My local, yeah,
very blue and reform, so, my goodness.
So, and God love them, you know, but there is actually 18 articles on the, I'm looking at Amnesty's website,
right,
on the Convention of Human Rights. So I know we talk about Article 3 and Article 8 a lot, but I quite like Article 6, which is right to a fair trial, or also prohibition of torture. There's one on here about freedom of thought, conscience and religion, which I think in these times comes up. Freedom of expression comes up quite a lot. So I think it'd be nice to know if we talk about...
We can adopt all of those, Ned, can't we? Although I have to say that the government's doing its best to try and take away jury trial in a lot of cases. But I'm not saying that we could have a British bill, or whatever you want to call it, of human rights, whatever you want to call it, surely.
I think we could, but what I'm worried about is I've sort of heard this argument before in sort of 2014, 2016, when it'll be so easy to leave and there'll be a brilliant deal and everything will be cheaper in sunlit uplands. And I think everyone, you know, voted, you know, with the information that they had. And I'm worried that we're doing this again. So it says on the bottom of it, interesting, signing. By signing a treaty, the state expression the intention to comply with a treaty. However, this expression of intent is not binding on its own. And I need to read it up on this, and I include everyone else to do this. It says, the convention also lists the protocols which make amendments to the original articles. These relate to property, education, free elections, and many other issues. So there is scope in here, by the looks of things, to tweak it.
What an interesting point. I haven't got time now, but I'll have a read of that. Ned, I'm really grateful, and I will look at that, particularly I like the line of intention. I have to move on. Ned, have yourself a safe day up there in Conservative and Reform land, and we will return to that conversation in a moment. But here's something that I think... As I said, I cannot remember the last time I watched a Formula One race all the way through. Max Verstappen had been world champion for 1,457 days, but that came to an end yesterday afternoon.
Lando Norris crosses the line, and for the first time in his racing career, he is Formula One champion of the world.
Lando, this is Zach from McLaren. Is this the world champion hotline?
Yeah.
You did it!
Thanks.
You did it! Awesome! Woo!
Thanks to Sky Sports for that. You heard from David Croft, or Crofty, and then, of course, Zach Brown, CEO of McLaren. Norris won by 2 points. He had to come third, and my God, he made sure that he did. And here he is after the win.
This is one I get to say thank you, Mum, and thank you, Dad. They're the ones who sacrificed so much to let me be the lucky boy that I am today, to live my dream, to do what I have loved doing since I was a kid.
Even I had a tear in my eye. I've never met the man. I don't think I've ever been in the same room as the man. I was just so thrilled for him. Someone who knows him well is Jim Boyd. Now, Mr. Boyd was Lando Norris's former tutor at Millfield Prep School when Lando was 12 and 13 and joins me now. Well, it must have been I've never met him. It must have been pretty emotional for you, Mr. Boyd. Good morning.
Good morning. Yeah, it's obviously all down to me.
How do you remember him? I don't know whether you watched Drive to Survive, but he is consistently seems a really decent bloke. All the other drivers like him. All the other team principals like him. Was he a likeable lad?
Oh, yes. He was very quiet, very friendly. I have to say, all the Norris children were very, very friendly, very pleasant. And he was also very gritty, very determined. And I never heard or saw or had any reason for anything negative about him. So to see him winning the world championship was quite surreal, because he's always still a little boy to me, even though you're seeing him as a grown man, yeah.
And, of course, you don't get to where he is as a world champion with putting in hour after hour after hour at the gym, in training, in practice. Was he a good pupil? Did he deliver his homework on time, or were there sometimes a few bumps in the road to keep that metaphor going?
He was a great pupil, and the thing was that made me notice and sit up and listen about him was that he would often miss a lot of school through, you know, go-kart championships around the world, but he would always make efforts to catch up, whereas I'm sure you know Millfield has a lot of sporting prodigies and stuff. A lot of them would use it as an excuse to not catch up, but Lando never would. He would always do his best to catch up, so he had a great work ethic.
I've got a note here that he hoped when he was a 12-year-old that he wrote a note saying he wanted to achieve what he did yesterday.
Yeah, I've got it, his little book, his group diary that I used to get them to keep. And when they first joined me, I said, put down your ambition. And he did put in writing, I want to drive from Formula One for the team McLaren and become world champion. And that was what he wrote it when he was 12 years old.
He even said the team he wanted to do it with.
He even said the team, yeah. I've got it in his handwriting. It's quite something, yeah.
Oh, I have enjoyed our conversation, Mr. Boyd. Thank you. The more I hear about this young man, what a great bloke. How old is he? Only 25, isn't he? Yeah, 26, I'm so sorry. 26 and a world champion. There. Thank you, Jim Boyd, Lando Norris's former tutor at Millfield Prep School. There you are. The nice guy can finish first. They don't have to come last. What good news. Thanks again, Mr. Boyd. Coming up after the news, the idea that we need to get more apprenticeships going. Work and Pension Secretary Pat McFadden told LBC yesterday...
This NEETS issue been rising for 4 years. It's also international. And I think this should become a Labour cause.
Neat to remind you, is not in education, employment or training. Skills Minister Baroness Smith joins us after this. 7:46 LBC News headlines then. Thomas Watts.
Britain is to host a mini-summit to discuss how to respond to US proposals for ending the war in Ukraine. The Defence Secretary has revealed plans to protect critical undersea cables and pipelines from the Russian threat. And more than £700 million is to be spent on creating apprenticeships in sectors like AI, hospitality and engineering. LBC weather dry with bright spells for many. Showers continuing in Northern Ireland and Scotland. A high of 14 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Long delays on the M25 in two places. Firstly, anti-clockwise on the northern stretch. It's slow from junction 25 at the A10 to 23 at South Mimms after a car broke down. And then clockwise, it's very busy from junction 14 at Heathrow to 16 at the M40. And that was after an accident that happened earlier. Very busy on the A3 southbound, heading down towards the Tolworth junction. A car's broken down, so one lane is closed for recovery. On the train, Southeastern are running southbound between Tunbridge and Hastings because a train has broken down. The Piccadilly line is suspended between Rayners Lane and Uxbridge. Better news for the Victoria line, though, those delays have now cleared.
The new LBC app. News your way. This is LBC.
This Christmas at Tesco, get selected meat joints and boneless salmon sides better than half price with your Tesco Club card. That's what makes it Christmas. Tesco. Every little helps. Majority of larger stores excludes Northern Ireland. Beef and lamb ends 28th of the 12th. Hawk, 6th of the 1st. Gammon, 13th of the 1st. Salmon, 1st of the 1st. Club card required.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973. LBC.
At Vodafone, you can save up to £1,032 with the Samsung Galaxy S25 FE when you trade in an eligible phone. And keep you and your family connected this Christmas. Hurry! Offer ends the 17th of December. So, go online or in-store today. Vodafone.
Save £576 on 5GB airtime over 36 months. £144 on phone and £312 with trade-in. Phone cost is £534. Credit and trade-in checks and terms apply. Financed by Vodafone.
At Fidelity, we've been helping our customers plan for their retirements for nearly 20 years. From understanding how much you'll need, to combining multiple pensions, we offer expert insights, excellent service, and even financial advice, so you can feel confidently invested in your future. For pensions, advice, or investment accounts, be invested with Fidelity. Go to fidelity.co.uk. Your capital is at risk. Transferring is not right for everyone. Terms apply.
To be honest, work had been a slog. I'm a designer, but some nights I was chasing invoices like my full-time job. Now Sage Copilot chases my invoices for me. I just need to click a button and it's done. And I get paid 1 week faster.
Sage Copilot is built with over 40 years of experience helping real businesses like Sophia at Solver Design. That's more than artificial intelligence. That's authentic intelligence. Search Sage Copilot to learn more. Working with 21 customers, each round payments came in 7 days faster with Sage Copilot. T's and C's apply.
At TfL, we're making tube journeys faster in the future with signalling improvements underway on the Circle, District, Hammersmith and City and Metropolitan lines. And there's also the Elizabeth line already giving you fast journeys across central London. That is how we're making the greener way to travel brighter for everyone. Search TfL Improvement Plan. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters. Elizabeth Line is fast compared to other TfL modes. Greener than total estimated petrol and diesel car emissions.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
10 to 8. It is undoubtedly a rather derogatory term, NEET. Not in employment, education or training, and the government is determined to do it. By the way, it applies to those aged between 18 to 24. Well, just outside that bracket is Lando Norris, of course. He's 26. We're going to worry too much about him because he's a Formula One champion. He's got more money than you can throw a stick at. But what should we do for the others? The government is determined to try and right this and is ploughing some money in. And here to explain more is Skills Minister, Labour Peer, Jackie Now Barrett-Smith. Good to have you on, Minister. What is it that you and your colleagues will be announcing today? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Well, first of all, in terms of those young people who are either earning nor learning, a new strengthened youth guarantee to make sure that young people who aren't in work are getting immediate support to be able to give them work experience and training opportunities. And then if they've been out of work for 18 months, a guaranteed job placement for 6 months. But also, of course, we know that apprenticeships is a brilliant route for young people into work. And that's why today we're announcing £725 million extra investment to help to shift what's been happening over the last few years, where we've seen actually a 40% drop in the numbers of young people starting apprenticeships. So we'll be supporting small and medium-sized businesses by fully funding the apprenticeship training. We'll be helping mayors to put young people who need an apprenticeship together with employers who are able to provide them, so that we can actually turn around the situation we find ourselves in, where young people are just not getting those chances to start in the high-skilled careers that are going to give them a good future.
You talked about a guaranteed placement of 6 months. How will that work?
So if somebody is on universal credit and they've been out of work for 18 months, they've been through the other support that we'll be providing for them, yeah, work placements and training, then they will get essentially a job for 6 months.
But where?
With an employer who will be fully funded to provide that job, and who also, importantly, will have a package of support put around that young person. Because, you know, we don't think anybody should be sitting not able to start on their career, and we're determined to.
But what
turn
sort of field
around.
Would they be in, Minister?
Could be in all sorts of areas. We're talking to employers now, and to those who'll be able to support the employers to take on young people.
Okay, you're aware, of course, that this comes as Office National Statistics figures showed that last month 1,000 people are losing their jobs a day. And figures out today, the monthly job report by KPMG and the Recruitment and Employment Confederation sounds that vacancies have fallen in every part of the economy, particularly in the hospitality sector, which again helps young people. Why is Labour getting it so badly wrong in this area?
Look, and we also know that there are a third of vacancies that are in existence which are there because there aren't the skills to fill them. So I think we need to do a better job of making sure that particularly young people have got the skills and the opportunities to gain the skills that will enable them to be part of the workforce of tomorrow and to boost productivity in the way that
we... They can't have a workforce today. There's 1,000 people are losing their jobs a day last month, ONS figures. Why is that?
Well, it's also important, therefore, as the Chancellor was clear in the budget, that we provide the stability in the economy that will help employers to take people on. But employers often say, look, we do need additional people, but what we need are the people who've got the skills to be able to contribute to our business. And what's more, we need help to be able to hire them. And those are things that we will be able to invest in with the £1.5 billion that we'll be devoting, particularly to young people.
But you mentioned the budget. Over the last two budgets, you'll be aware, Minister, the Chancellor's raised the cost of employers' national insurance and twice hiked the minimum wage. How is that meant to encourage employers to offer employment?
Look, I know that has made life tougher for employers, but it's worth noting for employers that there is essentially a tax break on national insurance contributions. If you take on a young person, if you take on an apprentice up to the age of 25, you don't pay national insurance contributions. If you take on a young person up to the age of 21, you don't pay national insurance contributions. This is just one way that we will make sure that we're tackling what is really a scandal with nearly a million young people not able to either earn or learn at the moment.
But you do agree, all right, national insurance, that's very fair response, thank you. But regards to the minimum wage, to lift, do you know what the minimum wage is in the United Kingdom currently?
Yes, it's just about, it's about £10.80 for adults. It's £7.50 for apprentices, going up to £8.
I've got £12.21 per hour as of April 2025.
For adults.
With lower rates for younger age. So, okay, so that's adults, is it? Okay. But to hike it twice for companies cannot make sense if you're trying to get them to hire people.
Well, the minimum wage is determined by the Low Pay Commission. The Low Pay Commission set up as an independent body when Labour, the last time we were in government, actually introduced the national minimum wage. Governments of all colours have taken the independent Low Pay Commission's recommendations and have implemented them, and that's what this government has done.
The £725 million, it's quite a sum, isn't it? How will we know if it's working, Minister?
Well, I think we'll know if we see a reversal of what we've seen over recent years, which is fewer young people actually being able to get apprenticeships. We think we can increase by 50,000 the numbers of young people who are getting that chance to start on a really high-skilled route into employment through an apprenticeship.
And, of course, this age group, I remind the listeners, you'll know, but I remind the listeners, 16 to 24, that will include a lot of university students, students who've left university, I'm sorry, who've done everything right. They've studied for their GCSEs, they've studied for their A's, they've got their degree. And they come out and they can't get a job. And some of them are quite highly qualified or well qualified. Why do you suppose that is, Minister?
Yeah, well, we know that graduate employment is tough at the moment. It is still the case that if you've got a university degree, you are much more likely to be employed than if you haven't. But, for example, graduates can get support from job centres. They can get help with CVs in order to help them into work. And making sure that young people have this opportunity, either through high quality degrees or through the apprenticeship route to get into work, is the reason why we're investing an additional £1.5 billion through the initiatives that we've been talking about this weekend.
All right. Finally, on a different subject, but you have the distinction of being the first ever female Home Secretary in the United Kingdom. So I wonder if I can get you to comment on the story in the papers yesterday that there are 170 foreign nationals who are believed to, who have been, quotes, involved in terrorism or extremism-related activities who cannot be deported. Why is that?
Well, this is exactly why. There'll be a variety of reasons, but this is exactly why, for example, in relation to the ECHR, the Home Secretary is already working on how we can clarify the provisions in Article 3 and in Article 8 in order to make sure that we can more successfully deport people. Look, this government has already increased the numbers of people quite considerably who were removed from the country because they don't have the right to be here or because they have committed a crime, and we will continue to do that, because being in this country is a privilege, and if you flout that privilege, you will be removed.
And lastly, another legal matter. You're probably not aware of a gentleman called Jamie Michael. Now, Mr. Michael has put out some rather disobliging and vile comments concerning migrants. He was cleared by a jury of racial incitement after 17 minutes. He now can't coach his daughter's football team because of his views. Do you think that's appropriate?
Well, you're right, I don't know the details of that.
I didn't expect you to know, but I've hoped I've given you a broad brush stroke of it. We have someone who's put out some pretty ugly views, was taken to trial, it was inciting racial hatred, cleared in 17 minutes. As Home Secretary, you'll know that that's pretty quick for a jury. I don't need to tell you how swift that is as a former Home Sec. Now he can't coach his daughter's football team. That seems a stretch, doesn't it?
I suspect that when it comes to contact with children, there are some pretty strong conditions around previous charges and criminal convictions. I expect that's what's happening here, Nick, but I don't know the details, and therefore, you know, I don't really want to comment further on it.
Tens of thousands of young people giving the benefit of a £725 million package of reforms, as outlined, and my thanks to Jackie, now Baroness Smith, Labour Peer and Skills Minister. And we will carry that conversation on after the news, particularly if, and I think if you're an employer, the national insurance, the minimum wage, and I appreciate if you're in receipt of the minimum wage, that's helped you. But just pause for a minute. You're not going to be offering more work if it's costing you more to hire those staff. Surely that's the reality. More on that after the Ed Crock News on LBC.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 8 o'clock, the leaders of Ukraine, France and Germany will meet Keir Starmer at Downing Street later. European leaders are trying to rally behind Volodymyr Zelensky as he faces pressure from the US to agree a peace deal with Russia. Donald Trump has accused his Ukrainian counterpart of holding up an agreement. Ashton Cirillo, a sergeant in the Ukrainian military, has told LBC that funding is also critical.
If we're able to get an injection of 150 billion or more euros, we should be able to execute and prosecute this war against Russia in a way that makes Russia wake up, and also for Russia to realize the EU is not going anywhere, the United Kingdom is not going anywhere when it comes to abandoning us.
The government has unveiled a new strategy to counter the Russian threat to critical undersea cables. Atlantic Bastion, a hybrid naval force, will combine artificial intelligence with warships and aircraft. Some 50,000 young people are expected to benefit from a £725 million investment in apprenticeships. Ministers are aiming to reverse a 40% fall in the number of young people taking up training opportunities over the past decade. They'll be available in sectors including AI, hospitality and engineering. Reform UK has strongly rejected claims it breached electoral law in Nigel Farage's Essex constituency. An activist who worked on his campaign to become an MP in Clacton has reportedly submitted a file to the Metropolitan Police. He's claimed Mr. Farage failed to register all of his expenses. More than 40% of young motorists have admitted to reading or sending phone messages while driving. The charity I Am Road Smart says many inexperienced drivers struggle to detach themselves from their smartphones. It is calling for the current fine of £200 to be increased. Sir Lewis Hamilton has congratulated Lando Norris on becoming Formula One world champion. The British driver secured the title with a third-place finish in yesterday's Abu Dhabi Grand Prix. He thanked his McLaren teammates for making his childhood dream come true and was cheered on by McLaren fans at Silverstone.
I'm proud of him!
The guy's gone and done it. We got a new world champion. Amazing. First McLaren champion since Lewis Hamilton. A new era, it's the Lando era.
Just great, another British winner. I mean, he's had a good season.
In the city, the FTSE 100 is reopening at 96.67. The pound buys $1.33 and a €1.14. LBC weather, dry with bright spells for many, but cloudy across the south of England. Showers continuing in Northern Ireland and Scotland. A high of 14 Celsius. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watt.
At Tesco Mobile this Christmas, we've got deals that sparkle. Like the iPhone 17 Pro Max with 3 months free Apple Music and 25 gigs of data for just £49.99 a month with club card prices, saving you £216. Now that makes gifting simple this Christmas. It pays to be connected. Search Tesco Mobile. Every little helps. Ends 28th of December. Club card and 36-month credit agreement required. Savings calculated on contract duration. Terms at tescomobile.com/terms. Apple terms at apple.com/uk/pro.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Good morning, 3 minutes after eight on Monday, December the 8th. And coming up in this hour, we'll go back to the conversation we just had with the Skills Minister, Baroness Smith, and ask, particularly if you're an employer, would you be ready to hand out those jobs? Also, this six-month guaranteed placement. What are the sort of industries there? And point to what would appear to be a degree of economic illiteracy, as they make it harder, I would suggest, for younger people to be employed. In other news, steak and chips for me, but the wife would just have a salad. The idea that portions in restaurants should be determined by whether you're a man or a woman, and a woman would have less, Professor Naveed Sattar is chairman of the government's Obesity Healthcare Goals Programme. He's authored this controversial report, Into the Size of Portions.
Obesity levels are going up fastest in young people, who again get the same portion sizes often as their adult parents, and in women all over the world. And portion size is one of the issues there.
The row over that football match at Aston Villa, where the Jewish community or Jewish fans of Maccabee Tel Aviv were told not to attend, goes on. Here's Assistant Chief Constable of the West Midlands, Mike O'Hara, telling a panel of MPs last week.
So there were Jewish community representatives who said they didn't want the Maccabee fans.
There was feedback documented within the community impact assessment that was clear that there were a range of faiths, backgrounds and ethnicities that were very concerned about this fixture.
Was there Jewish?
Yes.
Utter lies. The questions, by the way, were from Conservative MP and chair of that committee, Dame Karen Bradley. Utter lies. That senior police officer now forced to backtrack and apologise. We'll give you more details on that. And staying with football, but at a slightly lower degree, the man who's not allowed to coach his daughter's football team, Jamie Michael, speaking early this year about why he posted the vile video.
Published a video in the aftermath of the Southport stabbings. I basically called on the community for a meeting because I was concerned for, you know, I have two young girls and I was concerned for their safety.
It took a jury a fraction over a quarter of an hour to dismiss the case. Now he can't coach football? We'll give you more details later in the show.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
Fact, 1,000 jobs are lost a day. Fact, the number of young people, NEETs, I don't like it, but it does explain it, not in education and employment or training, is increasing. Fact, the government wants to do something about it, and they're putting £725 million to a package of reforms, which ultimately they hope will get these youngsters into the workplace. But as I said earlier, this is the same government that in two budgets have managed to increase national insurance and lift the national minimum wage twice. Now, if you're an employer, surely that bites, doesn't it? Speaking with the last 15 minutes or so, the politician who's taking this forward, Skills Minister Jackie Now Barron-Smith, explained how this package would work.
So, if somebody is on universal credit and they've been out of work for 18 months, they've been through the other support that we'll be providing for them, yes, work placements and training, then they will get essentially a job for 6 months.
But where?
With an employer who will be fully funded to provide that job and who also, importantly, will have a package of support put around that young person. Because, you know, we don't think anybody should be sitting not able to start on their career, and we're determined to.
But what
turn
sort of field
around.
Would they be in, Minister?
Could be in all sorts of areas. We're talking to employers now, and to those who'll be able to support the employers to take on young people.
Okay, you're aware, of course, that this comes as Office National Statistics figures showed that last month 1,000 people are losing their jobs a day, and figures out today, the monthly job report by KPMG and the Recruitment and Employment Confederation. Sounds that vacancies have fallen in every part of the economy, particularly in the hospitality sector, which again helps young people. Why is Labour getting it so badly wrong in this area?
Look, and we also know that there are a third of vacancies that are in existence which are there because there aren't the skills to fill them. So I think we need to do a better job of making sure that particularly young people have got the skills and the opportunities to gain the skills that will enable them to be part of the workforce of tomorrow and to boost productivity in the way
that we... today. The 1,000 people are losing their jobs a day last month, ONS figures. Why is that?
Well, it's also important, therefore, as the Chancellor was clear in the budget, that we provide the stability in the economy that will help employers to take people on. But employers often say, look, we do need additional people, but what we need are the people who've got the skills to be able to contribute to our business. And what's more, we need help to be able to hire them. And those are things that we will be able to invest in with the £1.5 billion that we'll be devoting, particularly to young people.
But you mentioned the budget. Over the last two budgets, you'll be aware, Minister, the Chancellor's raised the cost of employers' national insurance and twice hiked the minimum wage. How is that meant to encourage employers to offer employment?
Look, I know that that has made life tougher for employers, but it's worth noting for employers that there is an essentially a tax break on national insurance contributions if you take on a young person. If you take on an apprentice up to the age of 25, you don't pay national insurance contributions. If you take on a young person up to the age of 21, you don't pay national insurance contributions. This is just one way that we will make sure that we're tackling what is really a scandal with nearly a million young people not able to either earn or learn at the moment.
But you do agree, all right, national insurance, that's very fair response, thank you. But regards the minimum wage, to lift, do you know what the minimum wage is in the United Kingdom currently?
Yes, it's just about, it's about £10.80 for adults. It's £7.50 for apprentices, going up to £8.
I've got £12.21 per hour as of April 2025.
For adults.
With lower rates for younger age. So, okay, yeah. So that's adults, is it? Okay. But to hike it twice for companies cannot make sense if you're trying to get them to hire people.
Well, the minimum wage is determined by the Low Pay Commission. The Low Pay Commission set up as an independent body when Labour, the last time we were in government, actually introduced the national minimum wage. Governments of all colours have taken the independent Low Pay Commission's recommendations and have implemented them, and that's what this government has done.
The £725 million, it's quite a sum, isn't it? How will we know if it's working, Minister?
Well, I think we'll know if we see a reversal of what we've seen over recent years, which is fewer young people actually being able to get apprenticeships. We think we can increase by 50,000 the numbers of young people who are getting that chance to start on a really high-skilled route into employment through an apprenticeship.
And, of course, this age group, I remind the listeners, you'll know, but I remind the listeners, 16 to 24, that will include a lot of university students, students who've left university, I'm sorry, who've done everything right. They've studied for their GCSEs, they've studied for their A's, they've got their degree. And they come out and they can't get a job. And some of them are quite highly qualified or well qualified. Why do you suppose that is, Minister?
Yeah, well, we know that graduate employment is tough at the moment. It is still the case that if you've got a university degree, you are much more likely to be employed than if you haven't. But for example, graduates can get support from job centres. They can get help with CVs in order to help them into work. And making sure that young people have this opportunity, either through high quality degrees or through the apprenticeship route to get into work, is the reason why we're investing an additional £1.5 billion through the initiatives that we've been talking about this weekend.
Well, let's run some of these ideas past someone who's far better positioned to know whether it's going to work or not. Ben Rowland is CEO of the Association of Employment and Learning Providers. In a sentence, Mr. Rowland, can you just explain what that association provides for? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Yeah, our members are the organisations on the front line who deliver the kind of programmes the government wants to see more of. So further education colleges, but also universities, independent training providers who deliver two-thirds of all apprenticeships, and a growing number of employers themselves. Those are the people who come to us to get support, community, lobby the government on making sure these things work.
More on the package in a moment. Why is it so sticky in this area at the moment, do you imagine? What's causing the problems, Ben?
I think it's become the best intentions of the last government have made programmes like this just quite clunky and difficult to deliver, and have made them very attractive for large employers delivering long form programmes to existing employees, rather than what this government wants, which is, I think, what probably a lot of people would naturally feel apprenticeships are for, which is young people just starting out.
Right. Your view on what, you've probably seen it in far more detail than I have, but what I've just been discussing with the Minister. Is it going to work?
The structure is the right structure, but it's not enough. It's not enough. So the idea behind this, I think, which is that you have the existing apprenticeship programmes, which for loads of people work really well. We have 350,000-odd people starting an apprenticeship a year, and for those people it works really well. But obviously for a million NEETs, it doesn't, and then for a lot of employers it doesn't work well either. So this combination of apprenticeship programmes for in these foundation apprenticeships in retail and hospitality, I think those are going to work. I think the short courses are going to work for existing employers putting existing employees on programmes. But the numbers sound impressive, don't they? 725 million and then 820 million, but they're just about going to touch the sides with that.
Ben Rowland, you're CEO of the Association of Employment and Learning Providers. Thank you for your input. 13 after 8. Alex is in Harrogate. Alex, this is your son, is it? What's he trying to do, or what is he doing? Good morning.
Hey, good morning, Nick. So he's a joiner at college at the moment. He's level 2.
Right.
Apprenticeship. Obviously, there's a massive shortage.
How old is he then? Just help me.
He's 17.
Right, okay, yep.
And he's been applying for jobs since March for apprenticeships, and he's had not one single response, unfortunately.
They do reply, do they? Or they don't even reply to him?
No, he doesn't even get responses from them. And, he's applied from small builders through to national sort of companies, and he's had nothing back, which at a time where, the whole industry is crying out for people. But unfortunately, all we're hearing back is that... they only want qualified people, not apprenticeships, because they can't add value from day one.
Do you know, my heart goes out to people like your lad, because my children are considerably older. They're in their 30s, and fortunately they're in employment. But I remember when I was your lad's age, or a little bit older, there were jobs. And if you left, I was in newspapers, if you left one local newspaper in one part of Kent, probably within a couple of weeks you'd be working another newspaper in the other part of Kent. It is so different now, Alex.
It is, unfortunately. It's a big change, and we've got some friends that are actual builders as well, and they can't take him on specifically because of the national insurance rise.
Well, this is what I was trying to say to that minister. To me, it is economic illiteracy that you're, and I'm sure they do want to get young people employed, but they make it that much harder for companies to pay, because you put up the minimum wage and you put up national insurance.
Yeah, and that's the sort of what they're citing as being sort of the reasons that they can't afford to take on people. All the new building regulations that are coming in for building new properties as well is causing their costs rise. And, through those costs rising, that they've got limited capacity to take on apprenticeships.
What do you do for a job?
I've worked in IT, but I've done it for 35 years.
And was it far easier when you were starting out? Was it quite easy to get a job? Did you really have
No, it was so simple. It was, as you say, I could apply for one job, work there for 6 months, and then see another opportunity and climb the ladder slowly, through, just moving around my job. But
don't let the lad get disheartened. Put your arm around him. Literally, he needs all the help. Poor fella, doing everything right, learning a skill. That's a real skill to be a joiner. Can't get a job. Oh, you're suffering that. And also, thanks, Alex. Let's move up the age bracket. Remember, NEETS puts you 16 16 and 20, not 16 through 24. We're not in the States now, Nick. Between 16 and 24. So that's going to take university students as well, or people who've just left university. So they'll be, I would imagine, got a few quid in debt. I know they don't start paying it off until they owe a certain amount of money, but they've done everything right, and they can't get a job. Meanwhile, this government is determined to make it harder to be a boss. We'll return to that after the 8:16 LBC News headlines. Thomas Watts.
Sir Keir Starmer will host Volodymyr Zelensky, along with the leaders of France and Germany, at Downing Street later to discuss a peace plan in Ukraine. The Defence Secretary's revealed plans to protect the UK's critical undersea cables and pipelines from Russia. And it's hoped 50,000 young people will benefit from new apprenticeships. LBC weather, dry with bright spells for many, but quite cloudy across the south. Showers in Scotland and Northern Ireland. A high of 14 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Still very slow on the M25, anti-clockwise from junction 25 at the A10 to 24 at Potter's Bar, and that's because a car broke down earlier. Lengthy delays on the A12 southbound heading down towards junction 17 at Howell Green. A car's broken down, one lane is closed, and there are delays all the way back to the Boreham interchange. In Dartford, it's very slow on Prince's Road in both directions, and that's following an accident, and the road is partially blocked. On the train, southeastern services are delayed southbound between Tunbridge and Hastings, and there are delays of about 40 minutes on southeastern trains westbound from Crayford up to New Cross.
This is LBC.
When you buy a BMW approved used electric car, there are no surprises. You'll find the largest range and the widest choice. Naturally, every car has been meticulously checked by qualified BMW technicians. Hardly a plot twist. And they always come with a battery health report and at least 12 months unlimited mileage BMW warranty. Just as you'd expect. BMW approved used electric cars. Nothing new here. Search BMW approved used electric. Obviously.
This is LBC. Listen on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app. Download it now from your app store.
While all the Whos of Whoville were at McDonald's eating, the Grinch from his lair started plotting and scheming. Gherkin-flavored fries and odd socks will send them crackers. So try the Grinch's new meal and head down to Macca's. Until 4th of Jan from 11 a.m. Price and participation may vary while stocks last. Grinched for adults.
A message from TfL.
I saw him in the local news a few days after. His name's Rakesh. They had to put him into a coma just because I didn't look again at that turning. He had two kids. How did I not see his bike ahead of me? Well, I didn't look again. He didn't make it.
Drivers, take another look, not a life. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters.
They did it again. Flour instead of flowers. On my birthday. I'm 95 minutes late. But it's hard to leave when you've shared so much. Your postcode, your gluten intolerance. Then I saw it. 25% off your first Ocado shop. Plus, free delivery. And I just knew I'd found the online supermarket of my dreams. Ocado. Life delivered. Geographical restrictions. Min spend £60. Max saving £20. Charges and Christmas restrictions apply. New customers only. Terms at Ocado.com.
When you're smiling.
Banning Dental Group Clinics. With over 5,000 top-rated Google reviews. Keep on smiling.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
Let's continue our conversation about these apprenticeships and how difficult it is. Peter's in Haverford West. Now, you're an employer, are you, Peter? Good morning.
Good morning, yeah, hi. Yes, that's right, yes, I employ 25 people, yeah.
And what sort of line are you in?
We're suppliers of all sorts of equipment for elderly, less able to stair lifts, through floor lifts.
And do you employ, are some of your employees younger people?
Yes, we have a couple of younger people, yes, but that's more difficult employing other people.
So the government are looking for you then to possibly try and help here. What's your reaction to what you're hearing so far of these new initiatives?
Well, I've been listening to the programme this morning, and there's a lot of talk around the NI and minimum wage, which is a bit of a barrier. But another barrier, which I haven't heard being mentioned yet, is the new employment rights issue, where an employee will get full employment rights after it was going to be the first day.
What is the impact for you as an employer?
Well, the impact on the employment rights situation.
Yes, that point that you want to make, yes.
Yeah, I hesitate a bit in talking about this subject because it makes me sound like a Dickensian employer, but I'm not. I've employed 25 people. I've had people with me for 15 years, 10 years, 12 years, all very happily working with me. But when you get an employee who just is not suitable for the job, or to try to remove them from a business is just a nightmare. And also then, of course, you have run alongside that, you have the, as you've already discussed, the NI and the minimum wage, etc.
Well, so I'm a journalist and I read that in the newspapers. I'm not an employer. I put those points to a member of the government. The government member doesn't really think that it is an issue. You're the one who knows. You're the employer. Yeah. What is the reality of lifting minimum wage twice and national insurance as they did last year?
Well, where do I get the money from, Nick?
Well, exactly. Of course, you have to presumably charge your customers more and risk losing
that's
work.
Right.
Risk losing
that's
work.
That's right. I charge my customers more. They've had the minimum wage lift. They've cost more. It's just this. A never-ending round-and-round circle. It's ridiculous.
Mm.
It's not solving any problems.
Is it tougher now, you work-wise, than it was a few years ago?
Yeah, it is very much tougher, yeah.
And the major issues being what? The employment costs?
Employment costs, yeah. Employment costs, absolutely. It costs so much to employ somebody, and there are so many risks at employing somebody, that you, as the employer, will end up being the bad guy for employing the person in the first place.
Grateful for your time. Thank you, Peter, and good luck with the work that you do and the staff that you employ. Ian, you'll be the next caller on that. But let's come to a story. This is still making the headlines, that Aston Villa game. Do you remember? It was last month when the supporters of Maccabi Tel Aviv were told not to attend the game in Birmingham. Well, here's an exchange between Conservative MP and the chair of the Home Affairs Select Committee, Dame Karen Bradley, and the Assistant Chief Constable of West Midlands Police, Mike O'Hara.
The community impact assessment, was there members of the communities or communities that were saying they didn't want the Maccabi fans there? And did that include any Jewish representatives?
Yes.
So there were Jewish community representatives who said they didn't want the Maccabi fans there.
There was feedback documented within the community impact assessment that was clear that there were a range of faiths, backgrounds and ethnicities that were very concerned about this fixture.
A range of, but was there Jewish?
Yes.
No, there wasn't. If you looked at your papers yesterday, the Sunday Times, you'll have seen that's a lie. And that senior police officer, Mike O'Hara, West Midlands Assistant Chief Constable, has now apologised to representatives of the Jewish community after wrongly telling Parliament they'd agreed with the decision to ban the game. To Ian Now Lord Austin, who's former Labour MP for Dudley North, which is obviously in the area, UK trade envoy to Israel, and a season ticket holder for Aston Villa. What do you think needs to happen next? The apology has been done. Is that the end of the matter, Lord Austin? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. No, I think it isn't. I think it's far from the end of the matter. I think it's not just Mike O'Hara, actually. It was the Chief Constable as well who, I think, misled the committee in a whole series of ways last week. I watched that exchange with shock, really, incredulity. I've never seen anything like that, evidence like that presented to a select committee in Parliament before. I'd be amazed if they're not recalled. I think they have to be recalled. They've got to be held to account for the things they said last week. Look, it is extraordinary, Nick. What they're essentially asking us to believe is that the Dutch police lied in a report they compiled a year ago, long before the match in Birmingham was scheduled, about what happened at when Maccabi Tel Aviv played in Amsterdam. They then lied with being asked to believe, to the Dutch public, to the Dutch media, to their own inspectorate, to Dutch political leaders, and to the Sunday Times. And as a result of that, senior Dutch politicians and even the King of the Netherlands said things that weren't true as well. But then West Midlands Police are asking us to believe that they told the truth just once in a secret and unrecorded Zoom meeting with West Midlands Police, of which no minute was taken. I just think that's the most implausible explanation I've ever heard.
What's going on here, Lord? Back covering going on here, essentially.
Well, the big problem is that it seems pretty clear to me that in Birmingham, which is a great international city where people from all over the world should be welcomed, but it seems to me pretty clear now that in Birmingham there are problems with Islamist extremism and sectarian politics, with anti-Semitism, with hate preachers and extremists in the community who were threatening violence. And instead of ensuring that people can go about their lawful business freely and safely, the police capitulated to all of that. And it looks to me, and I think most other people now, that they made up the evidence to ban the Israeli fans. And it wasn't just in respect of the... I mean, when he said last week that the Jewish community had supported the ban, I just thought there is no way that's true. Mm. There is no way that's true. Mm. And, of course, within days it unravels. But they also claimed, and the Chief Constable claimed in that meeting last week, that people had been thrown into the river. Now, I've seen the video of that incident. It's one person in a canal, and he's being told that he'll be let out of the canal if he says Free Palestine. So it clearly wasn't... you know, a violent fan of Maccabi Tel Aviv, which is what the police want us to believe. And there were a number of things last week that the committee were told that were not true.
So ultimately, I have to say, and ultimately, this lands, of course, at the desk of the Chief Constable, Craig Guildford, didn't it? Is he fit for purpose?
Well, I think, look, if he can't account, I've said all along that I didn't accept what the police were saying right from the very beginning. I thought they were capitulating to extremism and racism in Birmingham. I thought it was a complete disgrace. He's been unable to account for the decisions they made. He's been unable to account properly for the so-called intelligence on which those decisions were based. They misled the committee in Parliament last week. I think they have to be recalled. If he's not able to account properly for all of this, then obviously his position would be untenable. I think it's untenable anyway, Nick, because his job and the police's job in Birmingham is to ensure that people can go about their lawful business freely and safely. Right. And they made it was absolutely clear at the match last month that they weren't prepared to do that. And if he's not prepared to do his job, then he shouldn't hold it, in my view.
All right. Let's lift the mood. You'll take that result on Saturday, won't you?
What a game. I was there. You know, well, you put a smile on my face now after... Look, I don't want to take away from the seriousness of what's happened in the West Midlands, but what a match that was. What a game.
Aston Villa beat Arsenal 2-1, if you're wondering the game to which you're referring. Arsenal, of course, still are, but were top of the table. Villa having a cracking season as well. Thank you. Aston Villa season ticket holder, former Labour MP for Dudley North and UK trade envoy to Israel, Ian Now, Lord Austin. Ian, thanks for your time on that. 8:28. Let's come back to apprenticeships. I did old tell Ian and ask him to hold in Northampton, and he has, and he's on the line now. Ian, what do you make of what we're hearing so far of these government plans? What impact will they have? Good morning.
Well, typically of the government, they've got no concept of what goes on in colleges and what happens to students and candidates.
Okay.
They have what they call a full-time programme, and students leave school, go on a full-time programme, and then look for employment at the end. And most of them, in my experience, end up at McDonald's and places like that. So the funding that the government gives those full-time apprentices should go directly to the employer. So right. The employer could take on, an apprentice. Most employers now are one-man bands, and a one-man band can't afford to take an apprentice on. So if that funding was put to the employer, I'm sure that you'd see an increase in the take-up of apprentices.
Sorry, instead of it going to the employer, it would go to who? Sorry, I'm confused.
Instead of going to the college, that money goes to the employer.
But how are we going to train? How are we going to train someone to be an electrician or a joiner, as we heard earlier, or an electrician? How are we going to do that?
Well, the apprenticeship stands as it is. What I'm talking about is full-time programs.
Right.
So a student would go from school straight to a college and go for 3 or 4 days a week or whatever it is, and they would teach him full-time. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But there's no job at the end of it, in my experience. They end up, you know, doing something completely different. So the money that the government spends
should go direct to should go direct to the companies as an enhancement to offer the jobs. Ian, I'm glad you held on. Thank you. More calls coming in on this. Chris, I think you've got a son who might be in the same age bracket. We'll hear from you. Also coming up after the news, a story you've heard on the LBC News Bulletin. More than 2 in 5 young drivers, it's virtually 50%, admit they illegally read or send phone messages while behind the wheel. Is your son or daughter, or are you, the guilty party? We'll look at that in more detail. It's 8:30. Breakfast with me, Nick Ferrari on LBC. The news is with Thomas Watts.
The Prime Minister is to host a mini-summit to discuss how to respond to American proposals for ending the war in Ukraine. He will hold talks with Volodymyr Zelensky and the leaders of France and Germany at Downing Street later. The Defence Secretary, John Healey, has revealed plans to protect critical undersea cables and pipelines. Warships and aircraft will be bolstered by autonomous vehicles and AI to help counter the Russian threat. More than £700 million is to be spent on creating apprenticeships in sectors including AI, hospitality and engineering. Ministers are trying to reverse a sharp decline in the number of young people taking up the training roles. LBC weather dry with bright spells for many, quite cloudy across the south and showers continuing in Northern Ireland and Scotland. A high of 14 degrees.
This is LBC.
At Vodafone, you can save up to £1,032 with the Samsung Galaxy S25 FE when you trade in an eligible phone. And keep you and your family connected this Christmas. Hurry! Offer ends the 17th of December. So, go online or in-store today. Vodafone.
Save £576 on 5GB airtime over 36 months. £144 on phone and £312 with trade-in. Phone cost is £534. Credit and trade-in checks and terms apply. Financed by Vodafone.
A southern train is a place where family moments become more peaceful. Where you can spread out and a game of I Spy gets a scenic upgrade with snacks, stories and the occasional sheep for a bonus point. Less stress, more yes, with kids tickets for £2 at southernrailway.com. Terms apply.
At ulisprosperity.com, you buy the car and we pay you up to £600 per month in rental income. For conditions, visit ulisprosperity.com.
When you buy a BMW approved used electric car, there are no surprises. You'll find the largest range and the widest choice. Naturally. Every car has been meticulously checked by qualified BMW technicians. Hardly a plot twist. And they always come with a battery health report and at least 12 months unlimited mileage BMW warranty. Just as you'd expect. BMW approved used electric cars. Nothing new here. Search BMW approved used electric. Obviously.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
Keep our conversation going about apprenticeships. There's 1 million people aged 16 to 24 not able to get into work, not even in training. Chris in Uxbridge. Chris is talking about your son here, is that right? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick, and it's lovely to talk to you again. Yes, indeed. Yeah, he's 29. He's right. Been out of work for the last 12 months after being made redundant from a certain supermarket around Uxbridge.
Right.
He has kind of, I feel, fallen through the gaps a bit here because he is not one of these young people that the government is now talking about. Also, he is on the restart program through the job centre. He applies for 5 jobs every day of the week, which is one of his requirements for his universal credit. And those jobs could be anything. He has to just apply for 5. And he could be a beautician or a bricklayer, this sort of stuff, when actually that is absolutely not suitable for him and his and what he wants to do.
And do they have to see documented evidence? Sorry. Do they have to see documented evidence?
Yes. So they have to, every Friday or every week, he goes for a restart appointment at the job centre in Uxbridge. When the person is not off sick or away or whatever and actually sees him, because he often walks up to the job centre and then they're not there, they then give him, they check his records, make sure he is applying for these jobs, and then give him lists of jobs to apply for. Now, last Friday is a really good case in point because he was given a list of 25 jobs, 20 of which were either expired, out of date, or already or unavailable. So he only had 5 of the 25 he was given by the job centre to actually apply for. And I just think that's ridiculous. You know, if they don't care about helping him, why should he sort of care about helping himself?
How is he keeping going?
Well, his mum and I are doing our best to sort of keep his mood up, keep his chin up. We support him clearly at home because he can't afford to move out anywhere. You know, so he, bless him, his mental health is really, really suffering with this as well because he's just getting knocked back after knocked back. And it's just soul-destroying to see him like this.
Is this situation the same with many of his mates?
A lot of his friends live away. That's the problem. So I'm in the military. We live in Uxbridge because that's where we are based. And so a lot of his friends on the south coast or living elsewhere. And so that's another reason why he's kind of feeling a bit isolated, because he would love to move back there, but he just can't afford to, even with moving in with his friends without a job and an income.
And did you go into the military as a young man, or did you have other jobs?
I did. I joined up at 20. It's all I ever wanted to do from 5 years old when I went to the Royal Tournament and sat in a tornado jet. That's all, everything I always wanted to do. And so I, you know, it's hard for me to sort of empathise with someone who doesn't quite know what the career path they want is and where they want to go, because I knew from 5 years old that I wanted to be in the Air Force, and I have been ever since. And so 32 years down, looking at retirement in 7.
Well done. Do you have other children? Does he have siblings, your boy?
Yes, so we've got 4 between my wife and I, and they sort of spread across the country, really.
And are they finding it equally difficult, or is it just this lad at the moment who's having trouble getting into work?
No, our daughter is finding it difficult on the south coast as well. She's a single parent and struggling quite a bit, so we support her as well. It's just the cost of living at the moment.
It's so tough for them. Give my best wishes to all of them. If you celebrate, have a happy Christmas with them all, your children dotted around the country, and that is the reality. All right, this lad is a little bit out of that age bracket, because he's 29. We're looking at 16 to 24, but also, as I say again, what if you or your son or your daughter is a university student? Is it £9,000 a year, the debt? I think it is, isn't it? So some of these kids will be looking at tens of thousands of pounds worth of debt, and they can't get a job. Now, I know they don't have to pay off the debt. I understand that until they start earning and earning at a certain level. But, I mean, here we go. This is Hannah. I'm 23. I did well through school with A's and B's at GCSEs, A-level, then went to get a law degree at university. I cannot get a job anywhere, neither in the legal industry or anywhere else, or even general admin. Like a previous caller, I rarely get a response to my applications. That's just rude, isn't it? This comes in from Henry. I find it infuriating nobody is highlighting that the minister got the minimum wage wrong. It shows the total incompetence of the government. £1.41 an hour out. This was when I asked the Baroness Smith what the minimum wage was, and she was, as Henry says, £1.41 out. What hope do businesses have if they don't even know the figures? More on that with you, Martin, in a moment. Let's go to other matters, and this actually is almost this age group as well. And you'll have heard this on the LBC News Bulletin, a survey of respondents aged 17 to 24, so it's virtually the same, they were 16 to 24, more than 2 in 5 young drivers, should we just say half, admit to illegally reading or sending a phone message while behind the wheel. This was done by the charity IAM, or I Am Road Smart, and they talked to more than 2,000 motorists. Amanda Stretton is a motoring broadcaster, former racing driver as well, and I understand you have children roughly in this age bracket. Is that right, Amanda? Good morning.
Good morning. Yes, I do. And I have to say, when I read this data, my heart sank. Having lots of experience behind the wheel of a car, I know just how quickly things can go wrong when they do go wrong. But also looking at my own children, because I look at them and think the way they communicate and interact with their friends, and it is so completely different to me and my generation. It is all done through instant messenger. Nobody actually has a phone conversation anymore. And so I can see why this is a problem that is seemingly getting worse, and why young people don't seem to really understand the consequences of using a phone behind the wheel.
What are we going to do? How are we going to educate them, Amanda?
Well, do you know, I think a lot of it comes down to the driving test and actual driving lessons. I think the way we teach our young people to drive these days is not sufficient. It's not fit for purpose. You know, it's very much based on theory rather than practice. I think doing skid pans, learning about wet weather driving, learning about ice, and learning how to control a car when the car has lost control, I think are absolutely critically important. Particularly, you know, we live on an island. With more and more cars are hitting the road every day, every year. And the roads are getting more and more crowded. So I think these are things that we really ought to be teaching our young people in order to make our roads safer. When they understand how badly things can go wrong, that's when I think they're going to think twice about using their phone.
Your children are slap bang in the middle of this other conversation we're having about that age group, about difficulty finding work or employment or training without prying. Are your two doing okay? Have they got employment? Are they at university?
Well, do you know, funnily enough, kind of, but no. My son is doing a master's degree in mechanical and aeronautical engineering.
Oh, wow.
He's meant to be having a year in industry. He got 2 A stars and 2 A's for his A levels. He's doing a fantastic degree at a great university in Southampton. Cannot get a placement, cannot find his year in industry placement. So has probably applied for between 40 and 50 placements, I think, and has been either rejected or ignored from every single one. So he's going to forfeit his year in industry and carry on with his degree in the hope that he can find a job when he leaves. But
you must be a very nervous mum, because obviously the job market is damn tough, and there's no indication it's going to get, despite the success that the United Kingdom enjoys in this field with motor engineering, not going to get any easier for the boy, is it?
No, and late at night, it gives me sleepless night.
I bet. Yeah. What about the 20? So is that the 23-year-old? What about the 21?
That's the 23-year-old. That's the 21-year-old. My daughter, just finishing. She's just about to graduate this year. She's been doing geography with business, and again is struggling to find anything anything for when she leaves. I mean, but she's still in the process of applying, so I'm choosing to remain optimistic for her.
Oh, dear. Can't let you go. I think I saw you on television. In fact, I'm sure I saw you on television yesterday. I can't remember which channel. Was it BBC?
It was BBC talking about the Grand Prix.
Talking about Lando.
Very exciting.
Come on, then. Give us your view on that. You're covering all stories. Let me see. Later we're going to be talking about how women should have smaller portions at men in restaurants. How would you feel about that, Amanda Stratt? If I took you out for lunch and I said, she'll just have a salad, fish and chips, and the girl will have a salad.
You'd get my fist probably somewhere on your nose.
Quite right. Talk to me about Lando.
Lando, phenomenal. Absolutely phenomenal. What a season it's been. I, like everybody else, was trying to second guess McLaren's strategy. I thought that they were going to be a little bit more conservative, protecting Lando, maybe making the decision that whichever driver out of Lando and Piastri got to the first corner first, that was the driver they were going to prioritise. That obviously didn't happen when Lando slipped to third and became under pressure from
The Ferrari, Leclerc. Yeah.
I was getting very worried then. But it all paid off in the end. I mean, he is such a popular driver amongst his peers and amongst the public. You know, he really is doing great things for the sport. And I think, you know, it just bodes for more better racing.
Brilliant.
In the...
He was nearly driven off the track at one point, though, wasn't he, by the other fellow whose name I can't remember. Is it Suki?
Noda, yes.
Yeah, that was...
He was. I mean, it was a, you know, very often we have races where they all get a little processional and, dare I say it, a little dull. This one kept me on the edge of my seat. And
you and me both. Not a little sweaty. Not a dry eye in the house when he hooked the checkered flag either. I was so thrilled for him. Amanda, thank you for covering all those stories. Amanda Stretton, motoring broadcaster and former English racing driver herself. Now, if you are out and about in the car and you can make a call legally, of course, so you don't pick your phone, just have a look at the cars going past you. And are people on the phone still? Or even a van? And if they are, what's their age? Are they their younger ones, 21? I'm surprised 21 through 23. You'd have thought they're so smart, these people. They realise the dangers. We'll come to that. But we're talking about apprenticeships, 8:43. Martin's in Brixton. Martin, you're on the radio. Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Thanks for taking my call.
Not at all.
This is really about what I would class as a success story in apprenticeships, but also it may give a bit of hope for people that have left school or and done their A-levels and not probably achieved their grades. My son went through both of that, I'd say average GCSEs, mm-hmm. went on to do his A-levels, didn't quite achieve what he wanted to, and then started that weird world of sending out CVs and whatever to try and gain himself some sort of employment. In the October time, we see a job fair advertised at the Westfield Shopping Centre, Shepherd's Bush, mm-hmm. and I said, would you like to go? And we took him, and there was lots of hospitality companies, hotels, Metropolitan Police Engineering Division. There was railway operators and also people that maintain the railways.
Mm-hmm.
Now, he's always been one of these children that's mad about trains, planes and cars. So he said, oh, I like the look of that. So he went and spoke to them and they offered him, they said to him, do you want to come to our open day on Wednesday? And he said, oh, I'd love to. So they registered him. Mm. We took him on the Wednesday. And on the Wednesday, he left, and I said, how'd it go? And he went, they said that anybody that's going to be successful will be called by 6 p.m. tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
We hadn't even got home, and they called and offered him an interview. There was an online interview.
Right.
And so on the Friday, this is less than a week after attending the job fair, on the Friday, he's had the face-to-face interview, and they called him back 2 hours later and said, yeah, we want you to start Monday.
So that really worked, didn't it?
In 9 days. Now, this was November 2024 he started, so he's just completed his first year. He's already started making inquiries as to where he can go with other companies.
And remind me how old the boy is?
He's 19.
This is sensational. You must be so pleased for him.
Nick, yeah, I am very pleased. I'm over the moon. I'm over the moon because everybody was saying university, university, university. He wasn't an academic child.
Mm.
Never was. Where he could write an A4 piece of paper, he'd write a paragraph.
Right.
But the money he's being paid as well is quite good. He's clearing £1,600 a month.
Fantastic. Well done to
on
the
an
boy.
Apprenticeship.
Well
now,
done.
Now, he's already been told that he has to do level 3, 4, 5 and 6. Which Network Rail have said they'll put him through, and the expected salary at the end of that will be leading his own gang upwards of £60,000 to £65,000.
You must be so pleased. Well done to the boy. He's shown a lot of endeavour and enterprise to get where he is. Martin, thank you for that. Coming up after the news, 30 years to the day since the fatal stabbing of the head teacher at the school gates, Philip Lawrence. Some of you will remember that. We'll be speaking with arguably one of his best-known pupils, the broadcaster Edward Adu, who will be recalling just what a sensational influence he was on that school. 8:46, LBC News headlines now. Thomas Watts.
The leaders of Ukraine, France and Germany will meet Sir Keir Starmer at Downing Street later. The government's unveiled a new strategy to counter the Russian threat to critical undersea cables, and Reform UK has rejected claims it breached electoral law in Nigel Farage's constituency in Essex. LBC weather, dry with bright spells for many, but showers continuing across Northern Ireland and Scotland, a high of 14 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Delays on the A12 southbound all the way from Junction 19 at the Boreham Interchange to 17 at Howell Green. It's because a car has broken down. In Dartford, there are delays on Prince's Road both ways because of an accident. And also the delays continue on the A2 westbound. There are queues of about half an hour from the Danson Interchange to the Kidbrook Interchange. On the train, South Eastern are now running between Tunbridge and Hastings, but with delays of about half an hour. Also, South Eastern are delayed between Sittingbourne and Sheerness-on-Sea, and Thameslink are delayed between Blackfriars and St Pancras. It's all down to a signal failure, and still no service on the Piccadilly line from Rayners Lane to Uxbridge.
This is LBC.
This Christmas at Tesco, 24 cans of Pepsi Max are just £7. That's down from £11.50 with your Tesco Club card. That's what makes it Christmas. Tesco. Every little helps. Majority of larger stores excludes Northern Ireland. Ends 31st of December. Club card or app required.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973. LBC.
A message from TfL.
I saw Alicia's photo in my newsfeed. All I can think of is her family. How they're getting on. If they're getting on. I didn't look when I pulled out, and she never made it home. Sounds crazy, but it felt like her motorbike came out of nowhere. But I know the truth. I didn't look again.
Drivers, take another look, not a life. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters.
For people living with dementia, Christmas can be confusing, overwhelming, heartbreaking. Families are often left to cope alone. But you can help a family reimagine Christmas. Donate to Alzheimer's Society and you can help provide practical support, expert advice and crucial companionship this Christmas. It will take a society to beat dementia, and we can't do it without you. Search Alzheimer's Society and donate today.
Every investor has a future in mind, whether it's seeing your kids through uni or picturing yourself retiring in Tuscany. The hard part can be knowing how to get there. JP Morgan Personal Investing can help you see the path ahead. With our intuitive app, expert support, and 150 years of JP Morgan's investing experience, you can start making more informed investment decisions today. Search JP Morgan Personal Investing. Invest with clarity. Capital at risk.
This Christmas, McDonald's and the Elf on the Shelf are bringing festive tasks to your little ones, like writing a Christmas card for your postie.
Thank you. You're one happy helper.
Some fun, some food, it's all inside this Happy Meal. Until the 30th of December, from 11 a.m, includes one pre-selected book or toy, while stocks last, subject to availability, fair ordering policy applies.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060 973.
10 minutes before nine is the time. We'll come back to our conversation about apprenticeships in a moment. But stamped at the school gates, a story that in many parts of London probably still resonates, and around the rest of the country. But I remember it vividly. It seems incredible. It's 30 years since this took place. And it was, of course, horrific events at the time. Philip Lawrence at the school gates, a school in Maida Vale. Now, there's a very powerful piece in one of the newspapers this morning saying that the successful broadcaster and writer Edward Adu owes it all to the fact that he had Mr. Lawrence as his head teacher. And Edward joins me now. Good to have you on. Haven't seen you for a while. I trust you're well.
I hope you're well too, Nick. Thank you so much. And very sad day. I can't believe it's 30 years on, but I do this every year to pay respect to a great headmaster who believed in everyone, and he made sure that his pupils excelled. And he gave me that opportunity when I knocked on his door one morning after watching an episode of Neighbours and decided, well, I'm going to set up a school radio station. And I thought, well, he would say, Ed, stop wasting my time. But he's those magical words. He said to me, how do you envisage running this station? And he let us run the radio station from his office and from the assembly hall. And he was so supportive. I mean, I ended up getting an award from Cardinal Basil Hume, who came to the school, the former head of the Catholic Church in England and Wales, who came to the school to give pupils awards. Again, another initiative that Mr. Lawrence created to give back to pupils. And I was awarded, and I didn't understand, but I thought, wow, he's such a cool and great headmaster. I mean, other than the bow ties and the Gregorian chants, he was an eccentric, but a caring headmaster. And when I found out, obviously on that tragic day 30 years ago, that he passed away, it not only this, you know, it was a shattering moment for everybody, not just for me, but for everybody who attended St. George's, because it's hard to describe how he truly valued the school and all of us.
Remind the listeners of the circumstances, because you'll be closer to it than I, Edward, but Mr. Lawrence was actually defending another pupil,
wasn't he? He was defending a pupil across the road from the school. I believe he had heard there was an altercation. He went to the aid of the pupil. It was a neighbouring gang, and he was stabbed to death by the guy who was convicted, Chindamo. And I keep in contact with Francis, his widow, and she's so thankful for everything that I do. And I always say to Francis, I said, there's no need to thank me. It's what Mr. Lawrence did, and also what he believed St. George's was about, because St. George's, before he took over, was deemed to be a failing school. It was that school that everyone knew, and everyone always said, oh, it's that school, the bottom of Kilburn High Road, Maida Vale. And he turned it around. And I mean, even now, the success today is based on the foundation that he placed. And I also mentioned to Francis, I said, I hope, because I know the Philip Lawrence Awards was created in the early noughties. And I know I know Michael Howard was behind that, and David Blunkett, and the government, the Home Office supported that. I think we need something. I mentioned this to Frances, and she, in fact, said to me, you know, there needs to be something in place, because even though what happened to Philip was tragic, Frances still believes in young people and in youngsters, and she believes that young people should be given a chance. And that was the ethos of Mr. Lawrence. He just wanted young people to be given a chance and an opportunity.
And lastly, just give listeners who are not familiar with London and where the St. George's Catholic School is, and you reference this in your piece, Edward, in the Times, the makeup of that particular part of town. You talk about how different communities
Wealth back. So if I'm standing sort of facing north, where St. George's is now, to my right, you've got leafy St. John's Wood. To my left, you've got sort of Queen's Park, sort of the Chippenham, Kilburn Park, and mixed pockets of poverty and wealth. And the thing is, you know, being at St. George's, we didn't see that. But I think it reflected in the school life. And also just to note, Nick, one fascinating thing which we did at St. George's, and we talk now about, there's always conversations about immigration and about race. Mr. Lawrence allowed pupils from other faith groups to attend. I'll give you a brief example. We had a friend of mine, Nishant, who was Hindu, my friend Armin, who was Muslim, and we would all say the Our Father together during assembly. And that's what was unique about St. George's.
Really enjoyed our conversation. Edward Addo, thank you, broadcaster and writer, remembering Philip Lawrence, a truly great teacher. His killer, Liako Chindamo, was 15 at the time, was released from jail in 2010. Edward, thanks for your time on that. 4 to 9, on the subject of young people driving with their cars, mobile phones, I'm sorry, while in their cars. Albain says, regarding driving, I actually used to place my calls from the car using hands-free, because with four young children, the only free, or rather free, moment I had was when driving from one errand to another. I would, however, fall silent on the phone if I had to pay attention, because I have the experience of driving more than 30 years in the countryside and the city. And on the subject of young people in work, Dan says, my son graduated in September, applied for two graduate schemes and was lucky enough to get two offers. Works in London on £38,000. The key is good education and social skills. Ooh, I think that's a little unfair. There will be lots of people whose children have got those social skills and have got good education, and they've come out of university with degrees, in some instances really impressive degrees, but they're still stuck. That, I think, is the reality on that one. Louis in Newcastle. Louis, what's your story? Good morning.
Hi, Nick. How's it going?
I'm good, thank you. You, go ahead.
Yeah, basically, so I know you've just mentioned it before, to do with, you know, people going to university, being graduates, and how that necessarily, you know, they can't get a job from that. Me personally, I don't think going to university and being a graduate deserves you a job anymore.
Why not?
So I'm a 21-year-old business owner. I set up a...
Sorry, the line, let's just... Let you, hopefully, you're a 21-year-old what, sir? I didn't quite get it.
Business owner. I'm a coffee business.
No, I don't... I don't... I, Louis, can you talk? Let's try and move you. We're going to have to move you quick because we've only got a minute or so to go. Let me do an email. If we can get you back, we'll put you up straight away. Tom in Eastbourne, your last caller, one of your callers pointed out one of the big issues. Universal credit claimants have to apply for 5 jobs a day. Half aren't even interested in the job, and therefore, as an employer, the amount of people applying for a job that don't respond to any offer in an interview makes it impossible from an administrative point of view to go through all of the applicants. That's a good point, actually. I hadn't thought of that. Dave says, I'm an employer and I have a number of workers on minimum wage. I'm happy to pass on the wage increase and hope we don't lose business, but there is a risk. But bringing workers' rights in from day one is going to cost jobs for sure. Typically, we would take someone on to see how they do for a month or two, and if it didn't work out, we would let them go and try someone else. That's not happening anymore. Lots of unskilled people will simply not get a chance. That's another aspect, isn't it, which in fact a couple of the callers have played on as well. Because although there have elements of the, what's called the Workers' Rights Bill, elements have been taken out, it is still, as with just would seem, just about everything else, getting so much tougher. And now they're going to spend £725 million to try and fix a situation which, in part, courtesy of the measures they brought in, we're losing 1,000 jobs a day. I don't think we're going to get that other fellow, unfortunately, to a better part of the country, so we might have to hold because the music means we will move on. And not able to coach his daughter's football team because of, admittedly vile, but rather far right-wing views. Jamie Michael spoke about why he put those videos up on social media.
Published a video in the aftermath of the Southport stabbings. I basically called on the community for a meeting because I was concerned for, you know, I have 2 young girls and I was concerned for their safety.
I carry no brief for that gentleman, but because of those views, and with a jury clearing him in 17 minutes, he's not allowed to coach his daughter's football team. Plus, the idea the obesity czar suggests restaurants should give women smaller portions than men. We'll take your views on that. 9 o'clock news is next.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 9 o'clock, the Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky is due in London for talks on ending the war with Russia. Sir Keir Starmer will host the meeting with Mr. Zelensky and the leaders of France and Germany at Downing Street later. European powers are trying to rally behind Kyiv as it faces growing pressure from the US. President Trump has suggested his Ukrainian counterpart is holding up an agreement with Moscow.
We've been speaking to President Putin and we've been speaking to Ukrainian leaders, including Zelensky, President Zelensky. And I have to say that I'm a little bit disappointed that President Zelensky hasn't yet read the proposal. That was as of a few hours ago. His people love it, but he hasn't. Russia's fine with it.
The Defence Secretary, John Healey, has revealed plans to protect critical undersea cables and pipelines. Warships and aircraft will be bolstered by autonomous vehicles and AI to help counter the Russian threat in the Atlantic. Tens of thousands of young people could benefit from more than £700 million in funding for apprenticeships. Ministers are aiming to reverse a 40% fall in young people taking up the training opportunities over the past decade. The jobs markets continued to weaken in recent months. The Skills Minister, Baron Kenneth Smith, who's been speaking to Nick, has admitted it is a tough time for employers.
But employers often say, look, we do need additional people, but what we need are the people who've got the skills to be able to contribute to our business. And what's more, we need help to be able to hire them. And those are things that we will be able to invest in with the £1.5 billion that we'll be devoting, particularly to young people.
Nigel Farage has been accused of breaching election spending rules in his Essex constituency. A former member of Mr. Farage's campaign team in Clacton has reportedly submitted a file to the Metropolitan Police. Reform UK has strongly denied the allegations. And Lando Norris has thanked his McLaren teammates for making his childhood dream come true. The British driver finished third in yesterday's Abu Dhabi Grand Prix to win his first Formula One World title. In the city, the FTSE 100 a short time time ago was at 96.73. That's up 6. The pound buys $1.33 and a euro 14. LBC weather, dry with bright spells for many, but cloudy in southern England. Showers continuing across Scotland and Northern Ireland. A high of 14 Celsius. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watt.
This Christmas at Tesco, get selected meat joints and boneless salmon sides better than half price with your Tesco Club card.
That's what makes it Christmas.
Tesco, every little helps. Majority of larger stores excludes Northern Ireland. Beef and lamb ends 28th of the 12th. Hawk, 6th of the 1st. Gammon, 13th of the 1st. Salmon, 1st of the 1st. Club card required.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Good morning, 3 minutes after nine, Monday the 8th of December. A former Royal Marine banned from working with children, even coaching his daughter's soccer team because of his right-wing views. How fair is that? The idea that women should be served smaller portions in restaurants. They don't need as many calories. So says Professor Naveed Sattar, chairman of the government's Obesity Healthcare Goals Programme.
Obesity levels are going up fastest in young people, who again get the same portion size as often as their adult parents, and in women all over the world. And portion size is one of the issues there.
Plus, to the school where students are rewarded with free TVs and bicycles for simply attending. Is that the way to try and tackle truancy?
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
Grange Hill, by the way. If you're struggling to remember what that music was, that's the TV show Grange Hill. So let me tell you the story of the former Royal Marine, Jamie Michael. And I want to go right at the top. I'm not making any attempt to defend the vile views that he put out on social media. He lives in South Wales. He was charged with inciting racial hatred after describing some migrants as scumbags and psychopaths in a 12-minute video posted on Facebook following the Southport murders of the three children. Yes, it was in the times of those so-called summer riots. Now, free speech campaigners said that spurious safeguarding concerns are being deployed to silence people with patriotic views in a scandalous abuse of the system. And they cite the case of Jamie Michael, who is an Iraq War veteran, and now been barred from coaching his daughter's football team due to safeguarding concerns. Well, here is Mr. Michael describing a conversation with his duty solicitor after that arrest for the video that he'd posted.
I was just, I was just bewildered, really. I just didn't know what that I had said that could have been, charged with them charges. And he also told me that I'm possibly looking at terrorism charges. And I really, really was kind of like thinking, what the hell's going on? And he also told me that my partner could also be brought in, but she guilty by association just because she looked at me. And that worried me then because my youngest daughter, she's 9, she's got, quite bad learning difficulties. And she's with us constantly. We can't let her out to play. So that was my main worry. He was going to take us both in and my little girl would be left in someone's care.
Journalist Tom Slater is closer to this story than most. He's editor of Spiked Online and he covered it in a documentary just a couple of months ago, Think Before You Post, How the UK Fell to a Sinister New Form of Censorship. And Tom Slater joins me now. What's the point you made in that doco? Good morning.
Morning, Nick. The point of the documentary was to put the kind of human face to the stories that we read about of people being arrested for speech online. And Jamie's was one of those stories. He was one of the people who got caught up in the wave of kind of post-Southport riots, speech-related arrests. He put out this video, 12 minutes in length, in which, there's a bit of intemperate language in there, but it's broadly speaking, responding to the issue of illegal migration, during that period where there was a lot of misinformation swirling about who the attacker in the Southport stabbings was, and essentially talking about there being radicalised idiots in those hotels, the migrant hotels and so on and so forth, speaking in a way that might be a little bit rough around the edges, but broadly speaking actually saying that people shouldn't be violent, that people should go about fighting illegal migration in the right way. He called for public meetings with councillors and MPs, but he was charged originally with inciting racial hatred. He was held on remand for 17 days, very unusual. And then, crucially, acquitted by a jury of his peers in 17 minutes. So the fact that he continues to be punished via this safeguarding panel, I think is an alarming indication of how, even when the criminal law fails to punish someone for speech, other bodies in society seem to step in.
I'm afraid I didn't see the documentary. Did you physically spend time with Mr. Michael?
Absolutely. We went and interviewed him in South Wales, where he lives.
What sort of bloke is he, Tom?
The measure of him I got was that this is someone who, to be honest, has done, broadly speaking, the right things in life. He did serve his country. He did go to Iraq. That's one of the reasons that he's particularly angry about his treatment by the British state, because he did lay his life down for this country. And also, the indication that I got was that, again, in his local community, this is someone who is very well respected, is someone who was, again, through his daughter's football teams and so on, was someone who was giving back. And for no other crime than maybe saying something in a slightly hasty fashion on social media, all of that is ripped away. And that's too common a story, I dare say, that we see in this country at the moment.
The FSU, Free Speech Union, talks about, which is crowdfunding, by the way, Mr. Michael's legal case, I need to say, talks about this being part of a sort of sinister trend. Would you agree with that, I sense?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's not to say there's any kind of organised plot, shall we say, but I think there's just various trends within society which are leading people to be treated very cruelly. I mean, the thing about being arrested for speech, let alone being banned from coaching your daughter's football team, is that it just leaves the air of suspicion around you. Even if you're cleared, as Jamie was, by a jury of his peers in 17 minutes, you barely had time to deliberate before they decided we need to throw this case out. The process is the punishment, and the punishment never seems to stop. And I think that's something that we need to draw a close to, definitely.
Lastly, how is this to be stopped? How is this to be reversed? What needs to happen, do you think, Tom?
I think there are two crucial things, one of which is that we do need to look again at legislation, whether it's hate speech legislation or communications legislation. We're now in a situation where more than 30 people are being arrested every single day for online speech. That is an outrageous affront to our fundamental liberties, and that needs to change. The other issue is that, and this is something that came up time and again in the documentary, clearly the police are going above and beyond what actually the law requires. You're seeing a lot of people arrested, investigated, and things often never getting to the point of prosecution because the CPS work out that actually no law was broken here. But it's not nothing to be arrested. As we all know, it has a chilling effect. So it's about the law, it's about the police, and it's also, given what's happened with Jamie Michael recently, it's also just a sea change throughout civil society. We shouldn't be punishing people for things that they've said, particularly when they've been cleared as a criminal matter. We need to have a much more kind of tolerant and, I suppose, forgiving atmosphere in society where these things are concerned.
Tom, where can listeners see your documentary? Is it still available somewhere?
It is. It's on YouTube. It's on X. It's on all the usual places. So do check it out if you're interested in this story or others like it.
Tom Slater is editor on Spiked, editor of Spiked Online, the documentary. Think Before You Post, How the UK Fell to a Sinister New Form of Censorship. Thanks for your input. Tom, listening, Joanna Nicholas, who's a child safeguarding consultant and social worker. Can you tell us, how do these safeguarding, they were brought in, of course, after the terrible murder by Ian Huntley. How exactly do they work? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Well, it's always done on a case-by-case basis. And in this case, it was the Football Association deciding that they didn't think he was a suitable person to be coaching children. And I couldn't agree more with their conclusion.
Really?
I'm not talking about the free speech aspect. I'm talking about, you've got somebody who, according to what I have read, referred to some migrants as scumbags and psychopaths.
Yes.
Do we really want that person as a role model for little girls? And imagine if you're a family of colour living in that area and your little girl wants to play football, do you really want her taught by a man who uses language like that?
Just to clarify, he's cleared by a jury of his peers, but for the South Wales Football Board, he's, or whatever it might call itself, he's guilty.
What their question is he a suitable person to be working with children? I wouldn't want him working with children. Just to be clear, Nick, he hasn't been barred from working with children. There are something like 80,000 people barred with working with children generally.
He can't coach his daughter's football team, is what I understand. Is that not right?
Correct.
Right.
But it's not barred with working with children generally. It'll be a case-by-case decision.
What on earth do you think he's going to do in teaching a group of young women how to trap, how to pass, how to head, whatever it might be? What on earth is that going to affect how they play football?
Would you want that man as a role model for your little girl?
I haven't got a little girl, but depends how good he is as a football coach.
But it's more than football, it's a role model generally.
He's a football coach, Joanna.
Yeah, they're role models. We need good male role models for little girls and little boys.
What?
Yeah, every adult in a child's life is potentially a role model, and we want good people.
For God's sake,
We want good people around children and not somebody who refers to people of colour as scumbags and psychopaths.
So because
that is not a good person to have around children.
That's it. He's written off forever then in this field.
In case by case. In this case.
This particular gentleman who fought for his country.
But there will be other things. There will be other things he can do.
Just let me finish. Fought for his country, was a Royal Marine, was brave enough to go to war for this country, said things in the heat of the moment, for which he has apologised, and indeed, I do need to stress again, was cleared in 17 minutes. They'd hardly sat down and had a cup of tea before they decided he was innocent. Mm-hmm. But he can't get involved in girls' football.
Is he a good role model for little girls? No, is the answer to that.
All right, we're not going to...
So he shouldn't be coaching.
All right, I'm grateful for your input. Thank you, Joanna Nicholas, child safeguarding consultant and social worker. Now, some people say that this underscores what we've heard from one Donald J. Trump, the administration repeatedly voicing concerns over free speech in the UK. Perhaps the most high-profile example was actually his Veep Vice President J.D. Vance, who made these comments while addressing the Munich Security Conference back in February.
And what I worry about is the threat from within. The retreat of Europe from some of its most fundamental values, values shared with the United States of America. And perhaps most concerningly, I look to our very dear friends, the United Kingdom, where the backslide away from conscience rights has placed the basic liberties of religious Britons in particular in the crosshairs.
This case involving this one-time football coach is, as I said, put together by the Free Speech Union. They now have a dossier that shows teachers have been reported over comments made in the classroom and staff room, some now facing a ban from working in their particular schools, and a charity worker reported about a row over grooming gangs. Lord Young, Toby Young, Lord Young, the founder and director, says citing safeguarding concerns to silence people you disagree with is a scandalous abuse of the system. Those protocols have been put in place to protect children from abusive parents and sexual predators, not people with patriotic views. Now, this gentleman doesn't have particularly patriotic views, I will grant you that. But he's undoubtedly a patriot. He was brave enough to serve as a Royal Marine, and indeed he saw combat in Iraq. But now he can't coach a football team in the Rhondda Valley. We'll take your views on that. And also coming up after the news, this idea that when it comes to food portions or in restaurants, women should be offered smaller portions than men. This is according to a recommendation to the head of the government's obesity programme, who says menus should be adapted to include smaller versions of meals containing fewer calories. Well, surely they should also be cutting down the calories for the blokes as well, shouldn't they? I'll take your views on that as well. It's 9:15, LBC News Headlines. Thomas Watts.
The leaders of Ukraine, France and Germany will meet Sir Keir Starmer at Downing Street later. The government's unveiled a new strategy to counter the Russian threat to critical undersea cables. And Reform UK has rejected claims it breached electoral law in Nigel Farage's constituency in Essex. LBC weather, dry with bright spells for many, but showers continuing across Northern Ireland and Scotland, a high of 14 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb in Worcestershire. There are severe delays on the M5 southbound to Junction 4 at Bromsgrove. There's been an accident. Only one lane is open and there are lengthy queues on the approach. In Warwickshire, on the M6, there are southbound queues, Junction 1 at Lutterworth, and that's because of the emergency repair works. Also on the M6, but in Cheshire, northbound delays to Junction 21 at Woolston. It's following an accident. Everything's on the hard shoulder now, but it's still slow from Junction 19 at Knutsford. In Greater Manchester, very busy on the M60 clockwise to Junction 13 at Worsley. There's been an accident and those queues back to Junction 10 at the Trafford Centre. And on the trains, Avanti West Coast start running at Liverpool Lime Street.
This is LBC.
When you buy a BMW approved used electric car, there are no surprises. You'll find the largest range and the widest choice. Naturally, every car has been meticulously checked by qualified BMW technicians. Hardly a plot twist. And they always come with a battery health report and at least 12 months unlimited mileage BMW warranty. Just as you'd expect. BMW approved used electric cars. Nothing new here. Search BMW approved used electric. Obviously.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973. LBC.
Train to Brighton with the besties. Immaculate vibes, as always. But I bet my ice skating is going to be pure chaos.
Oh, Em, you better hold my hand. Oh, I'm going up.
No, styled it out. I've got this.
Last one to the other side buys the hot chocolate.
Back on the train. Only fell twice.
Low-key legend.
We have to do this every year.
Download the Southern Railway app to book tickets and save a third off group travel and off-peak journeys. Southern Railway, where every stop is a story.
When it comes to retirement advice, the last thing you want is to be put in a bucket. Seen as this type of person, or that type of person. At Fisher Investments UK, we never put you in a bucket. We always tailor retirement advice that's just right for you. Fisher Investments UK, retirement advice that's as individual as you are. Learn more at fisherinvestments.co.uk. Investing involves the risk of loss. Fisher Investments UK is regulated by the UK Financial Conduct Authority.
Waitrose presents, and the main event. One cook learns that love doesn't always shout.
Ain't that for me?
Sometimes it whispers.
I saved you best bit, Dad.
Starring succulent number one free-range turkey bauble, wrapped in dry-cured beechwood smoked bacon, with cranberry jeweled pork stuffing and orange glaze.
Ooh, thanks.
Waitrose, the home of food lovers. Subject to availability and delivery slots, available to order online and in stores from 19th of December.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
Let's get in this conversation about the Royal Marine who cannot coach an under-15s team in the Rhondda Valley. Diane's in Dover. Diane, your reaction. Good morning.
Hi, Nick. What the lady was saying,
yes,
about him not being suitable.
Yes.
He's not banned from being around children.
No, but he's banned from coaching the team.
Yeah. Youth football, grassroots football, is multicultural. He cannot go in as a coach. I have good friends that are FIFA A and FIFA B coaches.
Right.
And they've coached all around this part. Margate, Canterbury, Whitstable, Chartham, mm-hmm, Dover, Deal.
Sorry, okay, all these Kent towns,
Yeah. And if they were to speak like that, which it's a family. When your kids go to football on a Saturday morning and they go once a week to football practice,
mm-hmm,
it's a family.
Right. Okay.
And
Why do you suppose the jury didn't see it that way?
Because he hasn't, sharing his own personal feelings, how he did, hasn't broken a law. But who is going to want? I certainly wouldn't.
You don't want. Do you imagine the makeup of the Royal Marines is quite? Do you imagine the makeup of the military and the Royal Marines is quite multicultured?
Diverse, yeah.
And he was a Royal Marine, and he served in the Marines.
Yeah. So what? Thank you for your service, sir.
Yes.
But he cannot be around. I feel sorry for his daughter. What on earth do you think he's going to do
with under 15-year-old girls then? How is he going to influence them?
Just being around them, his demeanour and that kind of thing. What is he going to do if a girl of colour is playing in a match against his daughter?
Why is it psychopath? What's that got to do with colour?
Oh, no. I'm not talking about the psychopath business. I'm talking about, he cannot make personal judgments on a minority like that.
Why have you said the word psychopath applies to an ethnic minority? If he'd said, and this is purely for purpose of explanation, Muslim psychopaths or Jewish psychopaths or Hindu psychopaths, I don't get it. What are you picking up that I'm not seeing here?
Sorry, sorry, you've totally lost me because I don't understand.
You're saying because he used the word psychopaths, he could be disobliging or unfair towards, let's say, a young black girl or a Muslim girl.
I'm not talking about psychopath business.
I'm so sorry, but that's one of the reasons why he was put on trial. So that's the reason why we're having this conversation, Diane.
The reason you're having the conversation is you're saying that because a jury of his peers didn't find him guilty of doing anything wrong, but in your view, and his view, I imagine, he should be able to coach his daughter's football team.
Right. He's talking about migrants, some of whom have come to this country and have been involved in the most brutal crimes, as you may be aware, sexual crimes, murder, and people. Don't you think that could be psychopathic behaviour? If you're involved in murder?
Yeah.
So there have been psychopathic behaviour. That's why the jury, after 17 minutes, they probably hadn't finished their tea, said, nothing to see here, but he can't coach 15-year-old schoolgirls how to take a free kick. I mean, I find it extraordinary.
No, but he doesn't just teach that.
What else?
If you, honest to God, my ex used to go to work, do a 40-hour week.
Right.
Train kids for 3-4 hours an evening after he'd done a day's work. And then go and play a match, which he's got to sort all the match stuff out as a coach manager. They have to sort all the match fixtures out and everything.
I do know. Unbelievably, I used to coach teams when I lived in the United States simply by the fact that I was British or English and I knew more about football or soccer than they did. So I've done it. I have coached teams, not 15. They were much, 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 much younger, primary school age. So I do know what you're talking about, but they never asked me for my political views on anything. I was just teaching the children which way to kick the ball and how to defend. That's all I was doing. I wasn't getting involved in lectures about asylum seekers. Diane, I've enjoyed our conversation. Good luck with the team that or the groups that you work with, and let's go to other matters. And this is seems a rather extraordinary one. Women should be offered smaller portions than men at restaurants, according to a recommendation from the head of the government's obesity programme. Professor Naveed Sattar said menus should be adapted to include smaller versions of meals containing fewer calories. He said this on LBC.
The article is actually prompted by my daughter and my wife, who are not that big. And often when we go for meals, they often are given a portion size which they find difficult to finish. They get charged the same. They feel guilty trying not to finish it. They sometimes get seduced to finishing it. And they would often like a smaller portion size, which is charged less, which is more appropriate for the size. And that would reduce food waste, would reduce guilt, and would reduce the seduction of trying to eat more for some people. And it's not necessarily just women. It's about people who are generally smaller.
I mean, this is extraordinary, isn't it? If you've ever seen me on TV, the idea I would sit down at a restaurant with my new wife, yes, I know, I'm very lucky, and say, there you are, darling, you have a side salad, but I'm going to have an extra portion of chips. Have you ever heard such cobblers? But I'm not an expert. I know someone who is. Dr. Federica Amati is head nutritionist at Zoe, or Zoe, a science-based personalised nutrition company, spelt as in Zoe, the girl's name, and joins me now. Come on then, a doctor's verdict or a doctor's view, what do you make of it? Good morning.
Good morning. Nick, I don't think it was a formal recommendation. I think this is an opinion. And honestly, it's like trying to cure the whole iceberg by looking at the tip. I think as a woman, when I go to a restaurant, I want to have a nice, indulgent meal.
Yes.
So look, going after restaurant meals isn't the right tack. We do know that we're surrounded by hyper-palatable, cheap convenience foods that don't fill us up. And they're created to make more profit for the companies that make them. So I do think there's some value in making like smaller portions of unhealthy junk foods cheaper to buy. That might make a bit of a difference, but we live in an obesogenic environment. So saying that obesogenic. Yeah. So our environment It's set up. No, no, it's fine. It's set up to encourage overeating of foods that are lacking in nutrients that taste delicious. So we override our satiety signals anyway. Only a few of us are privileged enough to go to lovely restaurants and enjoy a meal that is actually satiating and filling and be like, oh, that's a bit too much. If that happens, you can always ask to take it home with you if you've got enough of a leftover. So I don't think this will ever make it into an official recommendation. Reducing calories and portion sizes at certain outlets is not the way to address obesity as a whole in this country. We have to stop marketing really unhealthy foods, especially to children. We have to make healthier foods more affordable. And we have to make sure that food companies aren't allowed to create so much hyperpalatable food that we just continuously eat food that never fills us up properly.
But you say,
that's the problem. It's not portion size.
You say make healthy food cheaper. I often hear this, Doctor, but
yeah.
I could take you to a supermarket now. We'll get a nice bag of apples. We'll get some chicken breasts and a packet of what you call dried pasta. And we'll probably walk out for less than 10 quid and we've got meal to feed the children for a couple of days. That's not expensive.
You're completely right. No, you're completely right. So whole foods like that are not expensive. Unfortunately, we have a food culture now that doesn't have enough food education. People don't know how to cook a meal. A lot of families don't have a kitchen in their homes at the moment in the UK, which is terrible to even think about. So convenience foods that make for quick and easy meals for the whole family tend to be really unhealthy, and they tend to be cheaper than if you were to buy the whole ingredients and trying to cook from scratch. So we should be spending a lot more time giving people the tools to be able to make cheap, delicious meals with whole foods at home. But so we're talking about calories and portions at restaurants when the problem is people don't know how to take some vegetables home and make a soup, and they don't have the equipment to do it. So we're really talking about the wrong side of the issue when we're arguing about portion sizes for women, especially.
Without this kind of education program, as an expert in the field, do you see this simply getting worse?
Yes. Well, unfortunately, yes. At the moment, we don't have enough impetus from the government to improve food education, to make sure children leave school knowing how to make a simple basic meal, which used to be the case in this country. We had great home economics, and now children go to university not knowing how to make, you know, an egg breakfast. We have to start empowering children and families and adults with the right knowledge and the right tools to make healthy meals using, as you say, Nick, locally grown fresh produce that you can buy really cheaply. But you have to know what to do with it.
Is it pronounced Zoe, your company?
Zoe, yeah, it is pronounced Zoe, that's right.
Doctor, thank you. Go on, I didn't mean to be rude. You've got one sentence, if you don't mind, because I've got to get to a news bulletin, but in a sentence, what do you want to add?
I just want to add that people can access information on how to make healthier meals. At Zoe, we have lots of free resources, but so do lots of other great companies.
But they can't find Dr. Federici Amati, any other than Zoe, where the doctor is head nutritionist. Well, I have got to go. As you say, that nutrition company. Let's take one call on this. We'll go a minute late to news. Yola is... Oh, you're in Lanzarote. Good morning, Yola. Right, what are you going to tell me with portion sizes?
Good morning. Hello.
Hello.
From sunny, warm, gorgeous Lanzarote.
Oh, my
goodness. I hope all of you are jealous.
Yeah, well, it's pretty cold over here. I'm not going to lie.
About 24 degrees and sunny and just marvelous over here.
Stop it. 24 degrees. My word.
24 degrees.
You live over there now, right?
I live over here now, yeah.
How long have you been living there?
17 years, then 10 years in the UK, and then back here for about a year and a half.
And what do you miss about cold, wet United Kingdom where there are no jobs and prices are going through the roof?
You're going to laugh when I tell you that I miss the supermarkets.
Okay, supermercado, as we say.
Yeah, I miss being able to go into Tesco's, Waitrose, Marks and Spencer's, wherever, and having all the selection. We're over here, we're lucky if we can find broccoli in the supermarket.
Oh, how frustrating. Give me a quick word on portion sizes, because I'm already late to the news.
Oh, okay. So, I agree with your previous caller, but there should be smaller portion options. I have a small appetite, and I get frustrated. Well, not really frustrated, but I go into a restaurant, and I order what I want, and I end up leaving half of it or giving half of it to my partner or whatever. So I don't agree that it should
bowls.
Be men's portion, women's portion.
Bowls. You could have it in a little one of those plastic bowls, takeaway bowls, you know? Don't they do that for you so you could take it home?
What, a doggy bag?
Oh, yeah, doggy bag. Well, I prefer those plastic. You know the takeaway containers. Do they have takeaways on Lanzarote? They must do.
They do indeed. And that's what I end up doing. So I end up getting like two or sometimes even three meals out of one restaurant meal.
Have a great day in 24 or whatever it was, 26 degrees sunshine. I'm so late to the news, Yola, thank you. You're listening to Breakfast with me, Nick Ferrara, on LBC 9.32. Headlines, Thomas Watts.
The leaders of Ukraine, France and Germany will meet the Prime Minister at Downing Street later. European leaders are trying to rally behind Volodymyr Zelensky as he faces pressure from the US to agree a peace deal with Russia. The government has unveiled a new strategy to counter the Russian threat to critical undersea cables. Atlantic Bastion, a hybrid naval force, will combine artificial intelligence with warships and aircraft. Some 50,000 young people could benefit from a £700 million investment in apprenticeships. Ministers are aiming to reverse a 40% fall in the number of young people taking up training opportunities over the past decade. LBC weather, most places dry with some bright spells, showers continuing across Scotland and Northern Ireland. A high of 14 degrees.
This is LBC.
When you're smiling.
Banning Dental Group Clinics. With over 5,000 top-rated Google reviews. Keep on smiling.
You know how fans shout at football matches?
Oh, wake up!
That's because sound is the most effective way to tell the players they're rubbish. Works in advertising too. Because when you amplify your advertising using radio, your campaign is 49% more likely to get noticed. See radio differently at radiocentre.org.
This festive season at McDonald's, get
rich deals every day.
Okay, okay. With a sausage sandwich for just...
Let's see, 99 MP.
Six chicken McNuggets for just...
99 MP.
Fine. Get Grinch deals every day in
the McDonald's app.
18 plus app only. Ends 24th of December. One use per offer. Fees apply to delivery. Participation varies. T's and C's apply.
Unwrap daily surprises this December with the Little Plus Advent Calendar. Every day until Christmas, you could get exclusive offers like money off coupons and even the chance to win a year's free shopping. Check the Little Plus app every day to open 24 unmissable offers. Lidl, more to value.
18 plus GB only. While stocks last. Minimum spend required. Terms apply. See lidl.co.uk/LPTV.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
Now, here's a very good point from Mike in Wiltshire, this conversation we're having about the would-be football coach. Mike says, if juries are abolished for all but serious crimes, would this guy have been found innocent by a judge following guidelines? What an absolute... I should have thought of that, Mike. You can be prefect for the day. There you are. Mike, you are the prefect. Congratulations. Let's talk about that with Lee in Watford. Lee, you're on the radio. Good morning.
Yeah, hey, Nick. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. Tell me your view on this football coach. Well, sorry, this would-be football coach.
Yeah, I wouldn't let our 11-year-old football-addicted daughter anywhere near this guy, having watched the video. Have you watched the video?
I'm afraid I'm only looking at the report from today's Daily Telegraph. No, I haven't had time, obviously, because I saw it this morning, and I haven't... It's 12 minutes, isn't it?
Yeah, and it's been around for months.
It's the front page. Genuinely, the first I've seen. What does the video tell you that I don't know already, that I need to know?
Okay, so our local football coach up in Bushy in Hertfordshire, they spend 4 or 5 hours with their daughter every Saturday, Wednesday night. They do the Sunday training as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're not just coaching, Nick. They're guidance. They're adults. They're people hanging around. Yeah, you make these kind of comments to young ladies. I'm sorry, but...
Hang on. If he'd been saying it at the ground, for goodness sake, I agree with you. Does it not worry you a little bit that this...
Sorry. If he said it on YouTube, he's definitely saying it at the ground.
Well, he doesn't call the girls that, does he?
Well, what you think? A brown or a black girl?
Where is the colour in this? Because, as I say, I have not had 12 minutes since I came into the office.
He's talking about Muslim immigrants, Nick.
Where does he say that? I'm asking you where he says that, because...
Nick, watch it.
Well, he says the word Muslim, does he?
Yes,
Why is that not, why does the South Wales Football Board not put that forward in this evidence here to the Free
Speech Union? Watch the video and tell him if you want him anywhere near your granddaughter.
Well, I'll have to take... I cannot understand why they wouldn't cite that, the South Wales Football Board. And there's no way I'm going to be able to watch 12 minutes of video
now. Nick, they check on the coaches, right? Because they're spending time with their daughters.
Yeah.
If you want this kind of racist rhetoric, as Farage has been doing over the last week that you're defending, if you want this anti-Semitism...
Hang on, what's the rhetoric that I've been defending now from Mr. Farage?
You're defending anti-Semitism whilst trying to support the Jewish population. Like, I mean, it's out of control, this stuff.
I'm supporting anti-Semitism, am I? Did I miss it? Is that right?
No, you were defending Nigel Farage that said anti-Semitic tropes in 2019.
I know you're wrong there, because if you actually listen back to that, I said I would be guided by the callers. Does it? I asked
and
whether
ChatGPT exists, and I've got all the quotes you made on it.
You're keeping a dossier. I'm delighted. If you listen back, you will find out that I actually ask how important is it, and that's why I was guided by the audience on that one. Well, you've got the advantage. I have not got spare 12 minutes to listen to this video. I will make sure I do listen to the video because I find it staggering. And I know I'm rustling a newspaper before anybody moans in my ear. I find it absolutely staggering that is not mentioned at all from the South Wales Football Board. Not at all. But anyway, I'll have to take your word for it. Lee, thank you. Shall we come to something that perhaps is not quite so contentious, and I can have a view on, which is portion sizes. Tracy's in Tyneside. Tracy, you're on the radio. Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. How are you?
Good, thank you. What are you going to tell me?
So, I actually think this is not just a female problem anyway. It's a universal problem. Obesity statistics are pretty much the same between men and women. So, framing smaller portions in something for women, I think, is outdated, and I think also unhelpful. And as your guest from Zoe mentioned, it's not about eating less, it's about eating better. So a smaller slice of an ultra-processed meal is still an ultra-processed meal. So it's about improving the quality, and it's not going to keep people full. So I think they're going to be a bit disappointed when they get to the restaurant and they've only got a tiny portion.
What about this argument that apparently it's so difficult to eat healthily and it's expensive? I don't think it is. I think you can buy, as I said before, some fruit and some pasta and some fish or something and have a perfectly healthy meal for a tenner, under a tenner, for the family.
Well, you're probably right on that, but I think for a lot of people, they're working long hours. They're going to think about quantity over quality. They want to keep their kids full. And on the whole, these foods are less expensive. So I do think we need to make more nutritious options available. And that's what I don't understand, why the government don't do more in that way. The food industry makes so much money at these ultra-processed foods, and as we know, they are addictive. And we're just going to keep on eating them.
And this education programme that my other contributor talked about is going to be pretty important if we're going to put this right, isn't it?
I think so. I think also we have to mention about food shaming, and that when you have smaller options, are people going to feel compelled to have them? Are they going to feel they're going to be judged by the waiter if they're not having them? Because you're feeling they don't know how much exercise you've done, what your needs are in that day. And I just think for myself, I have very large portions, but it's lots of what I like, the right things. So,
long as you keep it that way, that should all go well. Congratulations to you on that, Tracy. Thank you. Enjoy whatever meal you have next. Let's feature. I haven't done much of the social media. We need social media. I haven't done any of these emails and texts. Simon here is furious. How can you possibly do an article, a newspaper article, that you've not read? You've not seen the video. Right. Let me explain how this works, okay? So I saw this story on the front page of the Daily Telegraph at about 6:40, 6:45 this morning. Where do you think I've had 12 minutes to sit down and watch an entire video? Just work it out. And you'll see that I haven't had 12 months to watch video. And so I don't know, and that's why we're going to suspend the conversation and we can still because I had to take what Lee said on evidence. I find it absolutely extraordinary that's been omitted from coverage. I wonder if we can get other cuttings on that, actually, so we can get in a better position to discuss that. So that's why. So the idea that I've been studying this all through the weekend, it's the first I've heard about it, and that's why we do need to watch it. But what we can come to, and a story that we do know every detail about, is the one that the idea of the school where they're going to try and encourage children to attend. And the way they're going to do it is to give special prizes. Yes, you did hear that correctly. Children will be rewarded for attending state secondary school with free televisions, bicycles, or £100 gift vouchers. It's the Co-op Academy in Bellevue in Manchester. It says the rewards and incentives for pupils will be for top attendance, and they hope it will drive down absenteeism. Laura McInerney is an education journalist and a former teacher and co-founder of Teacher Tap and joins me now. How big a problem is truancy? Good morning.
Good morning. Yeah, it is a problem, and it got worse during the pandemic, and it's never really come back to where it was from before the pandemic. So we've got more students who are off more often, and there is some evidence that the more that you are out of school, the less likely you are to go on and achieve. So schools have been given targets. The government have been quite strict on this in recent weeks, saying we want you all to get back to where you were before. And because of that, schools are looking around to figure out what they can do.
Does this work?
Well, rewards can work. One of the things that people will rightly point to is that often not coming to school is not exactly a choice. I mean, if you're really sick and you can't come to school, then it doesn't really matter if there's a telly on offer or not. But what it might do is give some students who are perhaps not sure about whether or not they want to turn up something positive. And also it gives the school something to talk about. It that's not just please come in. It gives them something that's a bit sparkly and grabs attention.
Is whatever happened to the idea of just turning up for school to get an education?
And that's still something that obviously people will be doing. It's not that in these cases it's going to be every child getting one of these things. There's often been a history of having attendance awards. So we know that before the pandemic, about 75% of primary schools and secondary schools did those anyway. So those were kind of certificates. Sometimes what you might add on top of that is a raffle or a kind of prize that you can get an opportunity to go and do a trip or whatever else. And this can just help with some of the motivation, as I say, and talking about it more positively. So it's not that we don't just expect people to turn up, that'd be great. But if you have got a problem, like in business, you might think to yourself, well, how do we motivate our staff? We'll put some prizes in place. That's also what schools are doing.
What's the impact of COVID been, lastly, on this?
It was pretty significant. So we dropped quite a high level of percentage points, and it almost doubled the amount of chronic and persistent absence. But, you know, that's often very, very complicated. So again, those students who are off a lot, it will be related to either things that are going on at home, it might be bullying at school, and those won't be solved by these simple things. I think everyone in education knows that, and so there's a range of other things that are going on in the background. It's often things like having mentors for the families, having liaison workers, but the lack of social services more broadly, the lack of social workers in particular, does mean those families are getting further and further behind, and that's why it's often been quite tricky.
All right, grateful for your input. Thank you for that. Laura McInerney, education journalist, former teacher and co-founder of Teacher Tap. It was pretty straightforward when I went to school. You went there, and otherwise you got into a degree of trouble because you needed to attend, but it all seemed to have changed. Let's come back to portion sizes. James is in Loughton. James, you're on the radio. Good morning.
Yes, good morning, Nick. Yeah. Great subject. I think, if I can say about the restaurant thing, I think a simple solution would be every meal comes with a calorie count and you can buy the meal according to the calories. So if you want 2,000 calories, regardless of how big the plate is, you've got it nailed. If you want 2,500, you pay more, etc. And I think most people would take a view, they know how much is too much in terms of calories, but not always when you see the plate turn up, you eat more than you need.
What is the way to try and solve this?
Well, fundamentally, it starts with the supermarkets, as far as I'm concerned. If you start with the supermarkets, and if this, any government actually gets their head round and stop them wagging the tail of sugar taxes and rubbish like that, hit the foods that are bad. The foods that are fully loaded with ultra-processed, and just change the priority in the supermarkets. Just really, you don't have to be stupid about it and just say no sweets, but you just make the priorities much, much bigger, and people will just shop according to how it's laid out and how they see it, and then more people eat, the prices come down, and it's great. I mean, the education's been dealt with at school, I understand. I'm far too old for that now, but I understand that's being covered.
Right.
But it doesn't seem, honestly, Nick, none of this feels like rocket science, and I think this is a big subject we're talking about and everybody talks about, but nothing really seems to get there. And also, while I'm at it, loads of zero drinks in pubs, please. Can we just get on with that? Not go into restaurants that don't serve non-zero drinks. I find it disgraceful now that sometimes you can go somewhere nice and if you want something zero, they look at you as if you're a criminal for not drinking.
Particularly this time of year. Stay safe, James. Thank you. 9:45 LBC News headlines then. Thomas Watts.
The Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky is due in London for talks on ending the war with Russia. The Defence Secretary's revealed plans to protect critical undersea cables and pipelines from Moscow, and tens of thousands of young people could benefit from more than £700 million in funding for apprenticeships. LBC weather, dry with bright spells for many, showers in Scotland and Northern Ireland, a high of 14 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. On the trains, there are delays across the Thames Link network. It's because of a signal failure right near to Blackfriars. There are delays on most services of around 45 minutes. Also delays of about half an hour on services for South Eastern between Tunbridge and Hastings, and about 15 minutes for South Eastern at Orpington. On the Underground, there are no trains running for the Piccadilly line between Rayners Lane and Uxbridge, and there are minor delays on the Central and Metropolitan lines. On the roads, there are queues on the A13 eastbound heading up towards the Wellington interchange, and that's because of the emergency works, and very slow on the M4 eastbound onto the elevated section.
Coming up at 10 on LBC, James O'Brien.
Young people, work, and how to get the first into the second, and Simon Marks on Trump's strategy announcement that could have been written by the Kremlin.
James O'Brien at 10. Listen on our free Global Player app or our new LBC app.
You are not an egg. You should not be put in a box. But when it comes to retirement advice, that's how some people get treated. Put in a one-size-fits-all box. Not at Fisher Investments UK. We work with you to create a personalised retirement plan. Fisher Investments UK. Retirement advice that's as individual as you are. Learn more at fisherinvestments.co.uk. Investing involves the risk of loss. Fisher Investments UK is regulated by the UK Financial Conduct Authority.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973. This is LBC.
If you have an M&S online account or a Sparks card, your data may have been exposed in a recent cyber attack. Earlier this year, M&S confirmed a data breach affecting customer information, including personal data. If you've ever shopped online at M&S or used Sparks, you could be entitled to compensation through a group action claim. Check your eligibility today at jointheclaim.com. It's quick, secure, and easy to do online at jointheclaim.com.
Hi, I'm looking for a pair of jeans.
Right. Low slung, slouchy, wide leg, bower leg, curved leg, flared, straight or skinny?
Blue?
Fashion. It's hard to keep on top of. Other things like the upcoming changes to renting are a bit easier. As a landlord, you will need to get on top of these important changes. These changes will affect how you manage your tenancies. Read the guidance at gov.uk/renting-is-changing.
Serious about the right vitamins for you and your family? Trust Vitabiotics, the UK's number one vitamin company, for expert nutritional care for every age and lifestyle. Vitamins for everyone, including well man, well woman, well baby, and well kid. From Boots, pharmacies, and Vitabiotics.com. For number one verification, see Vitabiotics.com.
There's an old Thai saying that roughly translates as: the family who takes the internet on holiday can locate a less crowded beach. Particularly handy, my friend, if it's peak mating season for nippy little crabs. Pack the internet with an eSIM from Airalo. That's A-I-R-A-L-O.
Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345
6060973. Right, come back to our conversation about school attendance in a moment. We need, though, to refer this story about the Royal Marine. And Lee in Watford, we've already asked you to send that video online. It is no longer available. That's what I'm told by my colleagues, obviously. You've made quite a serious assertion about what this man put online, and we have no way at the moment of backing up what you said, Lee. And we've been through the following copy, or my colleagues, the BBC, Wales Online, the Daily Telegraph, and the Daily Mail. And all of those four fairly major news organisations make no reference to the line you made about the people of a certain faith. So as I see it, and we ask again, will you provide us with the link? Because it is not available to be seen. So does he talk about psychopaths? Yes, he does. Does he talk about scumbags? Yes, he does. But your assertion that he mentions a particular faith, which I'm not going to say again, because if you've got that wrong, we're in quite a bad place now, because you've put that on air with what would appear to be zero backup. So can I ask you again, Lee, you say you were in possession of this, would you possibly send it to us? I would be hugely grateful, because otherwise you've made a totally unjust assertion about this man, and we got no way of backing it up. And again, if he is wrong, I apologise on behalf of us, because we have tried every which way to get this video. We've now read copy from four different news organisations. So as you all decide to get excited about the fact that I hadn't seen it, Well, A, it can't be seen currently. The one person who has it in his possession is yet to pass it on. So do please pass it to us as a matter of urgency, and then we can absolutely put it straight. But at the moment, as I say, and I've got four versions in front of me, which talk about him. Here we go. There's another one. I know I'm rusting a newspaper. He says, we need to get ready. It doesn't mean getting bats and knives and stuff. I'm talking about doing things the right way, getting in big groups, having meetings, going to the council, the police, the politicians, the councillors, and so on and so forth. He was arrested at his workplace and spent 3 days in a police station awaiting question, then 17 days on remand in Cardiff jail. And I say again, for that story, and again, for this to reach that magnitude and not mention the fact that there was a faith involved, I just don't believe it. I don't believe four news organisations would. I just simply do not believe it. So from the BBC to the Daily Mail, one of them would have mentioned it. So again, would you send us that video ASAP? And while we await, let's get into the subject of school attendance. Now, it was quite straightforward when I was at school. You turned up, unless you were ill, obviously. You had to go to the dentist or something like that. I didn't know. Otherwise, it all got rather ugly. But it seems rather different now. Who's been hanging on the line? Nadia in Chadwell Heath. Nadia, you're on the radio. What are you going to tell me? Good morning.
Good morning. I find this quite an interesting concept. I kind of disagree with it. I think, you know, children going to school is a basic part of society. Yep. So I think that actually we need to develop this culture where they recognise that and they are accountable for themselves and for their role in society. Now, I know that there are issues at home. Like when I was at school, my brother was bullied to the point of having his head smashed into the wall.
Oh, my God. Hang on. I know. Slow down. How old? Whoa. How old was he?
He was 14.
Oh, my God.
So this was secondary school. He still went to school every day. My parents did everything they could to tackle the bullying, but that's the point. I think that it can't be that we use these things that happen in life to then create new cultures, which actually in the long term, they're not sustainable. You know, what then happens when these children become adults? Should they be rewarded for simply going to work? Like, it doesn't work. I don't get it.
No, that actually is a very smart argument, is it? Because if you're going to expect rewards for pretty much doing what you're meant to have done, then it's never going to happen, is it?
Yeah, agree. Yeah.
Can I take you back to your school days?
Yeah.
Were you good at attendance? Were you a bit of a truant? Was it your mum and or your dad who said you're going to go to school?
Yeah, in my family have caring responsibilities as well, but still attended every day, got reasonably good grades. But then my parents are really behind all of us on that, despite all of the wider life challenges. And I think that actually what there probably needs to be is more sort of resilience training for children who do go through things like this, because it wasn't easy at all. It's not that, you know, me and my siblings didn't go through ups and downs. Of course we did, but there was very little support. And it's only because of my parents' determination that we didn't bunk off. And I think there needs to be more on those lines, rather than saying to everyone, yes, if you for simply showing up, you're going to get some sort of reward. It doesn't really make sense to do it that way.
What were the circumstances of what happened to your brother?
My younger brother is severely mentally disabled.
Oh, no.
So he's got microcephaly. It's quite a complex disability, and it requires a lot of care. Yeah.
I see. So is that why you believe he was picked on, why he was targeted?
Oh, no, that's my younger brother. My older brother was targeted just because I don't know why he was. He just was.
Okay. And I mean, did you say they banged his head against a wall?
Yes, his head was smashed into a glass wall.
Did he have to go to hospital?
Yeah, he had to have stitches. He's got, like, a scar running down sort of the back of his head and all that kind of stuff, yeah.
And did we ever find out what caused this?
It was a fight with another boy who'd been... Him and his little group had been picking on my brother for some time.
Right.
The school didn't do a lot about it. They didn't sort of exclude the bully or anything, but it got to a point where... Yeah, that then happened, and even after that, I don't think he was permanently excluded, which was something. But
that's not particularly good, is it? No, dear, thank you for hanging on the line and making your points. Thomas is in Fife. Thomas, you're on the radio. Good morning.
Morning. Thanks for your time. I have to agree with a lot of what Nadia just said there, that the school system is very much, it should be part of a cultural and societal requirement. But I think incentivising people, again, just for turning up and doing what they're meant to do in the first place, it doesn't solve the problem at all. We really need to look at it from a grassroots point of view to think, why are people not going in the first place? And instead of just putting a plaster on at the end, allow people to want to come to school and want to learn.
What, Did you always want to go to school? I don't know that I knew I had to go to school, but I can't pretend that I always wanted to go to school.
Well, I think it was a combination of both. It was the knowledge that I needed to go because it was what was meant to happen, and also I was very, very fortunate that I enjoyed school. I enjoyed the theory of learning. I was reasonably academic. I wasn't the top student, but. The good thing about most schools is there's a combination of both physical and theoretical learning, and that should really be championed. Yeah.
And take you back to your school days again. Yeah. Would your mum and dad have reacted if they suddenly heard that your school was saying, "Well, Thomas isn't always coming in"? How would that have gone down?
I think it'd have been a short and one-way conversation, if I'm honest.
And do you have children yourself?
Yes, I do. Yeah, they are one's at primary school at the moment, and she loves school. She's primary one, but she thrives in it. She loves it because from a very young age, education very much starts at home. And again, it's all based in the theory of learning. It's not just a structured education system that tells somebody that they should learn. It's our cultural and societal requirement to. Allow kids to want to learn.
Yeah, just lastly, I mean, yes, they should want to learn in a perfect world, but I wonder if that's always going to be the case, Thomas, in reality.
But it doesn't have to be a perfect case, but then if somebody doesn't want to learn, that's because they're getting taught incorrectly. I mean,
it could be true. Thomas, best wishes to your children. Thank you. Final minute to John in Ruislip. John, you have children. How do you ensure they get to school? Good morning.
Morning, Nick. Basically, I've got 1 year 4 and year 5. So my boy year 4, he is really sick this morning. My wife checked the temperature. He is really sick and he decided to stay at home.
Right.
However, my daughter, she tried to pretend that she's sick too. Started to try coughing, says that she feels weak and she doesn't want to go to school and all that. So we're fighting for half an hour, saying that you don't have temperature, you are okay, you need to go. And you know, dad tried to be so manipulative, you know, to manipulate you, to show you, to put on your feelings. But we need to stand as a parent our ground,
yes,
explaining to her that this is the right place for you to be. So in the end, she went to school, but we had like half an hour fighting, you know what I mean? And she tried to cry. Remember, you can't see, everything is fake.
Oh, that's awful when you get in those situations. Look after them, John. I've got to end it there. You had the last word of the day, and I'm done for the day. If you missed any of today's show, listen back on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app, where you can stay up to date with all the latest news and opinions, put your news categories in the order you want, pause and rewind live radio, and listen to a range of podcasts. Download the all-new official LBC app for free from your app store now. That's it for today. James O'Brien's the other side of the news on LBC. I'm back with you tomorrow morning from 7. Meantime, do stay safe.
Thank you very much indeed, Nick. The time is approaching 10 o'clock, and the influential think tank, a proper one, not one of those secretly funded lobby groups in the environs of Tufton Street, but the one that ran Keir Starmer's leadership campaign, is canvassing party members on a possible replacement. We'll have a little look at that later. But we begin with that story, the one that has been puzzling us, engaging us, obsessing us some mornings for what feels like a very long time. The phenomenon of young people who aren't doing anything with their lives, or at least on paper aren't doing anything with their lives, and the political necessity of turning the oil tanker round. Let's dive straight back into that first.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, the Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky is due in London for a mini-summit at Downing Street. He will meet Sir Keir Starmer and the leaders of France and Germany as he continues to face pressure from the White House. Donald Trump has claimed his Ukrainian counterpart hasn't read the latest plan to end the war with Russia. Mr. Zelensky says he is awaiting a full update from negotiations in Florida.
I expect detailed information from them on everything that was said to the American envoys in Moscow and on the nuances the Americans are prepared to modify in negotiations with us and with the Russians.
The UK is stepping up plans to protect critical undersea cables and pipelines from attacks. Warships and aircraft will be bolstered by autonomous vehicles and AI to help detect Russian submarines. The Defence Secretary, John Healey, has told LBC that Britain must be able to match
Moscow's capabilities.
We know the sort of threat that Russia poses. We know the big investment they're making in to try and develop it further. And we're determined not just to match that, but to make sure that Britain, working with allies like Norway, can remain ahead of that threat.
Ministers say an expansion of apprenticeships will benefit young workers and businesses. They're aiming to reverse a 40% fall in young people taking up the training opportunities over the past decade. About 50,000 people could benefit from an investment of more than £700 million. Reform UK has rejected claims it breached electoral law in Nigel Farage's constituency. A former member of Mr Farage's campaign team in Clacton has reportedly submitted a file to the Metropolitan Police. He's claimed the Reform leader failed to register some expenses. Hundreds of books have been damaged by a water leak at the Louvre. It's the latest setback for the museum in Paris, just weeks after thieves stole priceless crown jewels in broad daylight. About 400 books will have to be dried and restored. In the city, the FTSE 100 a short time ago was down a point at 96.66. The pound buys $1.33 and €1.14. LBC weather, dry with bright spells for many, but cloudy in the south of England. Showers continuing across Northern Ireland and Scotland. A high of 14 Celsius. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watts.
It's the most important time of the year. Festive Sarnie season. So let's get serious. And Subway knows there's only one way to do it. The Subway. Start it off with a sage and onion stuffing top bread. Yep, you heard it. Stuffing. Bread. Succulent rotisserie style chicken. Crispy bacon. Cheese and toasted, of course. If stuffing bread wasn't enough, how about even more stuffing? All that with a hearty drizzle of cranberry sauce. Told you we were serious. Get serious with the unrivaled ultimate festive sandwich. Now at Subway.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
Minutes after 10, a very good morning to you. Shall we start with the easy one? This is a beautiful missing word round to start the week. Are you ready for this? Wild blank seen in Norfolk for first time in five centuries. Wild blank seen in Norfolk for first time in five centuries. This could have a very deleterious effect on my inbox. Possibly your search history, but I'm saying no more than that. An extraordinary development in the United States over the course of the weekend with a foreign policy statement or a foreign policy plan that, I kid you not, could have been written by the Kremlin. Don't take my word for it. We'll get Simon Marks's expert view a little later in the programme. Why do you think the word sausage is in the news? You may enjoy the discovery of the answer to that question. And how worried should Keir Starmer be about news that a think tank that was instrumental in propelling him to the leadership of the Labour Party is now asking members what they think about a possible replacement? So, numbers are fascinating, aren't they? Was it Mark Twain talked about lies, damned lies and statistics, and you sort of know why. You can get them to do anything you want if you are so minded. But here's the crucial one. In the past decade, the proportion of young people not in education, employment or training has doubled. It's gone from about 4.5% of the 20 to 24-year-old population to about 9%. And it's a very big deal, particularly for two reasons, which are almost impossible to separate, despite, of course, the fact that the direction of political traffic in this country at the moment ignores the fact that they are almost impossible to separate. Growth and immigration. We need growth. There's a piece in the Financial Times today by Martin Wolf that is, absolutely chilling in its cool-headedness. But the failure, essentially, from 2007, 2008 onwards, from the moment of the global financial crisis right up until today, the failures of various governments to address this properly, or indeed to get the right answer to a difficult question, instead of making everything worse by introducing, off the top of my head, austerity and Brexit. But the necessity of growth is one of the few things upon which everybody agrees. Unfortunately, there seems to be still some argument about whether or not it can be achieved with a shrinking workforce or with an offer to potential taxpayers and earners that is less attractive than the offer being made by other countries. So we really, really, really need these young people who are already here to discover or to Well, we really need them in work. We really need as many of them as possible in either work or training. Every 18 to 21-year-old under the plan announced today who has been receiving benefits under Universal Credit will be guaranteed 6 months of paid work, with the government picking up the full bill for 25 hours a week. I want to be excited about this. Let me be completely honest. I want to be excited about this from a place of deep concern for these young people. Empathy, sympathy, concern, not anger. I mean, I'm sure some of them are choosing to spend their lives playing Ghost of Tsushima or, what's the other one I've been playing lately? Indiana Jones and the Grand Circle. I'm sure there are some young people who've managed to persuade mum or dad or both that they don't really need to leave the house. They're keeping the costs down to a bare minimum and they spend their lives online doing of course, I'm sure there are. But that does not explain the phenomenon to which we have now turned our attention on this programme many, many times. The pandemic was probably correlation is not causation, but you'd have to get up very, very early, I think, to persuade me that it's not linked at all. The pandemic was the period in which these figures rocketed most and rocketed fastest. This rise in young people not in education, employment or training has jumped since the COVID-19 pandemic. So although the figures compare decade-long statistics, the real driver of this, the real catalyst of this appears to be something that happened during that period, during that very, very poor period, which we discovered yesterday, saw the Conservative government waste about £11 billion of our money on dodgy contracts and, a little bit more on that as well later in the programme. One of the reasons why we couldn't quite work our way into this story when we started talking about it, is because there is no simple answer to this question. And that should have been obvious to us from the start. Maybe it was obvious to you, and I'm doing that dreadful thing I do. When I make a mistake, I impute all of us having made the same mistake. But you may remember me admitting to you, actually, I'm almost sort of confessing to you, that I didn't feel we were getting this conversation right. And you can feel it. You can feel it as well when we're getting something right, when we're discovering things that we don't already know, when we're plotting a course that resists the siren lure of just identifying a section of society in a confusing situation and just attacking them. Very popular, great business model. Loads of people do it on a daily basis, but it doesn't really help anyone or improve anything. But we weren't getting it right either, and I couldn't work out why. I would speak to the occasional parent about why the young person in their life wasn't doing anything. But I was frustrated by the failure to identify what you might call universals.